इक्ष्वाकुतनयो वशिष्ठं अवृतद्विजं आरभ्यशत्रुं सोऽप्याह शक्रेण प्रागृतोऽस्मि।
सुखदेव गोस्वामी सेड After beginning sacrifices, Maharaj Nimi, the son of Ikshvaku, requested the great sage Vasishtha to take the post of chief priest. At that time, Vasishtha replied, "My dear Maharaj Nimi, I have already accepted the same post in the sacrifice begun by Lord Indra."
So Nimi is the son of Ikshvaku. He requested Vasishtha to become a priest. So it's a very small episode. Now several episodes will come, they are already small. So Vasishtha said, "I have already accepted priesthood in some other place." Vasishtha was little greedy for remuneration at both places. Here is the translation, second verse.
"For unnecessary cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contribution from the king..." I shall return here after finishing the yajna for Indra. Kindly wait for me until then." Maharaj Nimi remained silent, and Vasishtha began to perform the sacrifices for Lord Indra.
So Nimi did not say anything. Vasishtha is saying, "I have already agreed to perform Indra's sacrifice. I will come back later." Sometimes we may get opportunities to do two things, two privileged opportunities. So we may not want to leave both. So by accepting two services, which we are eager to do, what will happen is we may compromise on one service, we may do justice to one service, and we may not do justice to other service. If you are the only person who is supposed to do, that's a different thing. Then it's like overburden or overloading oneself. But if someone else can do it, and if that does not delay the service and it can be done in a more effective way, then why you have to be greedy to do that? So there are different situations where we need to do services. Sometimes we want to do some service, sometimes we don't want to do that service. Sometimes multiple people want to do the same service, some people nobody wants to do that one specific service. All these situations will come up very soon. Maybe already you must be having some experience. Here is a typical case where this person wants to do both the services. He is interested to do both the services. Mainly not because of the spiritual content in it, but for some material respect and remuneration or whatever material benefits that he may be getting out of that service. So he was greedy and he wants to accept both. And he also gave preference. Okay, Indra's service I need to do first. Nimi's service, let him wait for a while, no problem. So that's what he was thinking. But Nimi, he is not in a mood to wait. So there was an emergency from Nimi's side also. Read the second translation, meanwhile he'll adjust. Third.
Maharaj Nimi began being a self-realized soul, considered that this life is flickering. Therefore, instead of waiting long for Vasishtha, he began performing the sacrifice with other priests.
Mm. So Chanakya says the duration of life may end at any moment, but if within this life one does something worthy, that qualification is depicted in history eternally. So, like, one perspective of looking at things is, we need to we need not waste time in waiting to do some important activities. Yeah, time we'll not get this time again, let me do this now. So sometimes we may have to take that call. And this may not be true always. That sometimes waiting is needed. Sometimes without waiting, finishing that service is needed. Right? We need to have some discrimination when to do what. That is totally subjective. We can't get a black and white principle now that, okay, in these cases, you should not wait. In these cases, you should wait. So that we cannot say. That's subjective. But several situations in life will bring us to a point where we need to do things immediately without waiting, without wasting time. So Nimi's situation was like that. So in this context, Prabhupada quotes Chandakya Pandit. Here is a great personality, Nimi, who knew this fact. In the human form of life, one should perform activities in such a way that at the end he goes back home, back to Godhead. That is self-realization. So I need to do some sacrifice. Why should I wait for a long time? If this priest is not available, let me employ some other priest. Right? So that was Nimi's simple rational analysis. Right? With no other agendas. He just didn't want to waste time. That's all. But sometimes we may have to wait also. In the case of Ambarish Maharaj, he also had to break his fast. So some of his Brahmana people who are suggesting him, giving him advice, they told him, you don't have to wait for Durvasa. You can take some water. Because he's coming so late, you can take water. So taking water is considered like breaking fast and not breaking fast also. That is inconceivable. You can fast while taking water and you can break your fast also after taking water. So that way you can accept. So that in that situation he could not wait, right, to take that water for, he could not wait for Durvasamani. Then there were some other incidents that happened that you know, you just read recently. So in some situations we cannot wait. We have to take a call. We can't wait for someone to come and give their inputs and all. We need to move forward, right? So this is one typical situation like that. So there are other situations where we may have to wait for a long time. If it's a very critical decision, we'll have to wait for a long time till the relevant consent person comes and then gives his consent. We cannot move ahead, right? So when to wait, when not to wait, when to take a call yourself, when to wait for someone else to come and decide, that's totally subjective. So in this case, Vasishtha told Nimi to wait. But Nimi was not in a mood to wait because he was thinking that why should I wait? Time will pass. I will be losing valuable time. And he will go, he will perform sacrifice for Indra and then he will come back. A lot of time is gone. So let me do the sacrifice. So after completing the sacrificial performance for Indra, Vasishtha returned and found that Nimi Maharaj has disobeyed his instructions. And Vasishtha happens to be guru of Nimi. Thus Vasishtha cursed him saying, may the material body of Nimi who considered himself learned immediately fall. So now this is considered unnecessary curse. Why unnecessary? Generally when guru says, my dear disciple, you wait for me, then only we can do. Disciple has to follow. Right? But here disciple did not follow. What is wrong on guru's part? But this guru is not like a selfless a guru who just enlightens the disciple and gives him the freedom to progress in a spiritual life. Not like that. Here you see, this is considered unnecessary curse. For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contribution from King of Heaven, you have lost your religious intelligence. Therefore, I pronounce this curse. Your body also will fall. Right? The religious principle for a Brahmana is that he could not be greedy at all. In this case, however, for the sake of more lucrative remunerations from Indra, Vasishtha neglected Nimi's request on this planet. And when Nimi performed the sacrifice with other priests, Vasishtha unnecessarily cursed him. When one is infected by contaminated activity, his power, material and spiritual, reduces. All the Vasishtha was spiritual master, because of his greed he became fallen. So this kind of momentary outbursts and clashes, differences of opinion, this can happen at such great levels also. So that is the theme of the material world. So a great sage like Vasishtha, he also became greedy for remuneration. And when his expectation was frustrated, he was expecting that Nimi has to wait for him to conduct the sacrifice, and so that he can get more remuneration from Nimi also. He want heavenly remuneration also and earthly remuneration also. So because of that greed, he became angry. And after he came back, he was seeing Nimi performing the sacrifice, already finished the sacrifice with other priests. He could have understood. So Vasishtha did not say that, oh fine, without me also he conducted, maybe I am not wanted. He must have developed some detachment, right? So when you are not needed in a situation, why you want to forcefully keep yourself in that situation? Right? You are not invited for a discussion. You are called, I said I am busy, you just wait for me, and they are not in a mood to wait. So let them go ahead. So you should have that detachment. But without me they have taken this decision. How can this happen? Right? So this is little, and that too, it's not your responsibility to be there. It's not your thing. It's totally a Nimi Maharaj initiative. It is Nimi who wants to conduct this sacrifice, and he invited him. So he's like a guest only. When you're a guest in some place, so you can't just demand attention. Right? You can't demand people to wait for you. So if it is your thing, for example, you are supposed to do some service and someone else is taking call on your behalf. That's like whimsical behavior on his part. There, if you become angry, that is a little reasonable. But here, Nimi wants to do some sacrifice, he invited you. He said, I am not available, I have some other sacrifice, you wait. No, I can't wait, I will do. Then how can he become angry? Right? So becoming the priest of Nimi is not the adhikar of Vasishtha. Right? Although he is acting like a guru, but because of this greed, he fell down from his position of guru. So his disciples' curse also affected him. Right. So after saying this, Maharaj Nimi, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Then Vasishtha, the great grandfather, gave up his body also. But through the semen discharged by Mitra and Varuna, when they saw Urvasi, he was born again. So now one interesting thing is, just by seeing Urvasi, Mitra and Varuna discharged semen. So there was no physical contact or union. So another prominent theme in this ninth canto, is how lust can allure people, to what extent lust can allure people. So through that seminal discharge, he came, or Vasishtha took a second birth. His body fell down as per Nimi Maharaj's curse, but again he took birth. Through this incident. So Mitra and Varuna chanced to meet Urvasi, the most beautiful prostitute of the heavenly kingdom, and they became lusty. Because they were great saints, they tried to control their lust, but they could not do so, and thus they discharged the semen. The semen was kept carefully in a water pot, and Vasishtha was born from it. So, seventh verse. You have some question?
It was mentioned in two verses that when Vasishtha told Maharaj Nimi that I am going to perform sacrifice for Indra, so it was mentioned that he remained silent. So in that case, similar situations comes there. So rather than being silent, if he can upfront told that, okay, you are not available, we can...
Yeah, that's a good point. So upfront, he should have told...
Because he was expecting that I will come and I will be doing that.
Yeah, that's one personal practical application point you can take up. Right, if we have an opportunity, if we have already decided to conduct the sacrifice through some other priest, you could have told. But it's not very clear whether Nimi Maharaj has already decided, or maybe later he felt that, why should I wait? So let me conduct. So it's a decision came right in front of, the thought came right in front of Vasishta, or later, that's not very clear.
For us, kind of, we can, as a lesson for
yeah.
us, I was thinking.
So that point in the proposal itself you can mention. Prabhu, if you are available. So if you are available, you are please cordially invited to grace this event. But if you are not available, but the date is fixed, we will invite some other guest. So we can immediately say that. That is nice. Now if he says no, then date already is fixed. So maybe, let's invite someone else. He's not available. So that's nice. And later if that person becomes upset, that's a different thing. So these are some finer things that we need to observe. Good observation. Next, 7th verse. Read the translation.
During the performance of the yajna, the body relinquished by Maharaj Nimi was preserved in fragrant substances. And at the end of the satra yajna, the great saints and brahmanas made the following request to all the demigods assembled there. If you are satisfied with the sacrifice and if you are actually able to do so, kindly bring Maharaj Nimi back to life in this body. The demigods said yes to this request by the sages, but Maharaj Nimi said, please do not imprison me again in a material body.
So because of Vasishta's curse, Nimi Maharaj's body fell, material body fell. So all the priests requested that, my dear demigods, if you are pleased with the sacrifice of Nimi, so please give his body back. Right? Let him have a body. But Nimi says, no, I don't want a material body again. Somehow Krishna orchestrated this incident that I will lose this body. I don't want this body again. Don't imprison me in this material body again. That was his point. So demigods are in a position many times higher than that of human beings. So therefore, although the great sages and saints were also powerful brahmanas, they requested the demigods to revive Nimi's body. So one should not think that demigods are powerful only in enjoying senses. They are also powerful in bringing a dead body back to life. So there are other similar instances also in life. Prabhupada quotes this life of Savitri and Satyavan. So Savitri was running behind Yamaraj, please give my body, give my life of my husband back. So she was given. Right. Next.
Yasya yogam na vanchanti. Viyoga bhayakataraḥ. Bhajanti charanam bhojam. Munayo hari medhasaham. Maharaj Nimi continued, Mayavadis generally want freedom from accepting a material body because they fear having to give it up again. But devotees whose intelligence is always filled with the service of the Lord are unafraid. Indeed, they take advantage of the body to render transcendental loving services.
So Nimi is saying that I am more interested in performing transcendental loving service to the Lord than accepting another material body and again suffering the threefold miseries. So somehow its body got relinquished because of Vasishta's curse or whatever. So I don't want to accept it again. So Prabhupada quotes, Nadhanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye. So because Nimi was a great devotee, he was not accepting even a body also, all that is being offered. So Prabhupada says, the Lord referred not to an ordinary birth, but a birth in which to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. When he says, Mama Janmani Janmanishware, means I want to be able to remember the lotus feet of the Lord life after life. That was the prayer of Lord Chaitanya in the Sikshashtaka. So, life after life, when he said, in the next life also I should be able to remember Krishna. That kind of life I want, not just another material body. That's not the point. Such a body is desirable.
A devotee does not think like yogis and jnanis who want to refuse the material body and become one with the impersonal Brahman effulgence. When Nimi Maharaj refused the material body, that does not mean he wants to attain impersonal liberation. Right? He does not want another body which will entrap him in material conditional life. So a devotee does not like this idea. On the contrary, he will accept any body, material or spiritual. He just wants to serve the Lord. That is real liberation. Ihayasya Harir Dase Karmana Manasagira also Prabhupada quotes. And the desire to serve the Lord establishes one as liberated in any condition of life, whether in a spiritual body or a material body. In spiritual body, the devotee becomes a direct associate. But even though a devotee may superficially appear to be in a material body, he is always liberated and is engaged in the same duties of the service to the Lord. Now we have this example of Anantacharya in Tirupati. You remember that? So when he was bitten by a snake, you remember? Anantacharya's example everybody knows. So he was bitten by a snake and other devotees are coming and asking him, please take some medicine. But he is not taking. Devotees went and reported to Balaji. And Balaji requested him, please take medicine. Otherwise you will die. The poison will permeate throughout your body and you will die. Then Anantacharya said, my dear Lord, which poison are you talking about? I already have the poison of six anarthas in my body. If that poison is superior, the snake poison cannot harm me at all. But if snake poison is more prominent than the poison of anarthas in me, then I will die. And if I die, I will come back to the spiritual world and serve you there in Vaikuntha. If I don't die, I will serve you here in the material world. It doesn't make much difference. So no need to take medicine in any way. So this is the situation of a devotee. Narayana parasarve nakutaschana vibhyati. Swarga apavarga narakeshu api tulyartha darshinaha. So the changing material situations are not having much effect on a devotee's consciousness. So for a devotee there is no pain, pleasure or material perfection. One may argue that at the time of death a devotee also suffers. But in this connection the example may be given that a cat carries a mouse in its mouth and also carries a kitten in its mouth. So when devotee is encountering material miseries or some health problems or death or some other calamities in this material world, he always sees them as the mercy of the Lord. When misery is perceived as mercy of the Lord, so where is the question of misery? Right? So his devotional service and his hearing and chanting equips the devotee with such a consciousness. So there is no perception of misery only. So it's considered that cat is only catching, means misery is only coming. But the devotee becomes the kitten and an ordinary materialist becomes a mouse. So both are having different experiences, right? So depending on who they are. A person whose intelligence is always concentrated upon the service of the Lord is unafraid of accepting a material body. Whereas a non-devotee having no engagement in the Lord's service is very much afraid of accepting a material body. So this is the one. You have a question? You can ask loudly.
Without body, means because Maharaj Nimi was without body, how is the liberation possible? Because to get liberation, we need a material body. And his body has been lost because of a curse. So without getting a material body, how will get liberation?
See.
Because he has this subtle body. Still with him.
Bhakti is ahaituki apratihata. It can be performed in any situation. Now we cannot have a standard formula in every devotee's case. So Nimi's case is a little different. Yeah, definitely if he has a body, if a devotee has a material body, external body also with all the senses functioning, he can engage those senses in Krishna's service. And definitely devotee has no fear of material body. Even if he has material body also, he will utilize it in Krishna's service only. That is one perspective. That may be true in some other devotee's case. Right? But in Nimi's case, what we can see is his unique consciousness.
he thinks, you see the next verse, 10th verse. Deham nanuva, nanuva rushteham, dukha shoka bhayavaham, sarvatashraya yato mrityur, martyanam, matsyanam udake yatha. I do not wish to accept a material body, for such a body is the source of all distress, lamentation and fear everywhere in the universe, just as it is for a fish in the water, which lives always in anxiety because of fear of death. Here Nimi's consciousness is that in what mood is he rejecting material body? He is thinking that if I enter a material body, I may have to lament, there will be distress, I will have to experience threefold material miseries, etc., etc. In that mood, he is rejecting the material body. Now, you may not be adopting this mood, and you may not find some other devotees having this kind of mood. But this is the unique mood of Nimi. That is his devotional service. Now, in Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, in one prayer, what did he say? He said, Naivo dvijayak paratoratya vaitaranya stadvirya gayana mahamrata magna chittaha. Socetato vimukha chetasa indriyartha maya sukhaya bharamudvahato vimudhan. He says, my dear Lord, I am not at all afraid of this material existence. I am afraid of the condition of this materialistic people. I am worried about them. I don't want to leave them in this material world. I'll allow them to rot with material miseries and then get liberated. So I am thinking about them. But I have no fear of material existence. Just few prayers back, what did he say? Naham bibhemi ati ajitateti bhayanakasya jihvarka netra bhukuti rabhasogra damshtrat. He said, my dear Narasimha Dev, this fierce form of yours is not causing any fear in me, but I am fearful of this material existence. Right? So, at one point he said, I am fearful of material existence, because he was imbued in that mood. But after some time he said, I am not fearful of this material existence, I am worried about these people. So compassion became prominent. So all these moods are valid. Right? Here, the mood of this devotee is, I don't want this entanglement of, this material body. Right? Because of this material body, I will feel very distressed or lamentation. That was his mood. Some other devotee may think that, no problem, let the material body come. Through that material body, I will engage in service. That may be his mood. So these are all valid moods. And as far as you are saying, how can someone be liberated, how can someone perform devotional service even without material body? Yeah. That is, then you bring the principle of ahaituki apratihata. Bhakti can be done in any situation if only one has the intention to do bhakti. It is not obstructed by any external circumstances. That makes sense? Does it make sense? Like, huh?
It's a rare example, the first time.
It's a rare example, correct. You don't find this kind of example everywhere. Right? Not all devotees are saying that, no, no material body. I'll be in the settled body or spiritual body and then do that. The material body, whether in the higher or lower planetary system, is destined to die. In the lower planetary system or lower species, one may die soon, and in the higher planets or higher species, one may live for a long time. But whatever it may be, there is, this world is mrityu samsara vartmani, there is repetition of birth and death. So he just wants to stay away from this cycle. So some devotees may say, I don't mind transmigrating from one body to another body. And some other devotees will say, I don't want that disturbance, let me focus on worship. That's his mood. Kumaras will say, no, we will not get into married life. That we just want to focus on our devotional service. Brahmaji, you find someone else for this service. Priyavrata will say, okay, we'll accept this service. Right? I'll accept this service for your pleasure, to be of some assistance to you. Kardamani also says, he is not interested in this service of creating progeny. But still, Brahmaji wanted, as a dutiful son, Kardamani said, okay, I will accept household life. He performed 10,000 years of austerity, and then he got a suitable wife, sanctioned by the Supreme Lord himself. Right? And he lived an ideal household life for some time, and immediately he said, I will retire. Right? So these are, all are correct. All three cases are like perfectly valid cases. Right? So rejecting an order is valid, accepting an order is valid. Accepting an uncomfortable situation in which one cannot peacefully perform devotional service is also valid. That is considered sacrificing spirit of the devotee, and that is glorious. And avoiding an uncomfortable situation in which he cannot practice devotional service nicely, that is also valid. Right? Depending on what mood are you accepting. Right? Ultimately, the mood bhavagrahi janardana. Ultimately, Krishna accepts that mood. Right? The mood will manifest in various ways, and that's a detail that is subjective, that is different in different devotees' case. So the example given here is very nice. That is fish. Right? Water is a very nice place for a fish, but the fish is never free from anxiety about death, since big fish are always eager to eat the small fish. Now, the fish who has taken shelter of water has no anxieties. It can swim against the stream also, against the current also. That we have seen in the previous cantos. Now, the same example is utilized in a different way. So, fish in the water is always in anxiety. Now, fish outside water is in anxiety, that is not the example here. Fish inside the water is also in anxiety. Why? Because bigger fish will come and capture this fish. So similarly, someone who is not even having a body, he may be in anxiety, that was your point. But he says, in the body also there is anxiety. Because bigger fish of material lamentation and distress and fear, envy, greed, other material relationships, etc., they might come and disturb him. So in that mood, he is rejecting. So, and Prabhupada quotes in this context, Falguni tatra mahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. Right. So the consistency factor in Bhagavatam is Bhakti Yoga is the supremest path. Right? There is no other transcendental process which is superior to Bhakti Yoga. And another consistent theme is Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although in different episodes, different personalities are described more prominently, Krishna remains the ultimate. Right? So, Taddhama Vrindavanam, Aradhyo Bhagavan Rajesha Tanayas, Taddhama Vrindavanam, Ramya Kacha Dupasana, Vrajavadhu, Vargena Vakalpita. So, like that, these are the five conclusive factors that Lord Chaitanya held as supreme most. There is no compromise there. But in what mood different devotees perform devotional service? Everybody is unique. Different people have different stories. Right? So all need not be the same. Nimi is considered a great devotee and he has a different approach in his devotional service. And in this context, Prabhupada says, being in a body means there is definitely misery. Nimi wanted to avoid that. And he quotes Ahastana Sahastanam, Apadani Chatushpadam. So all these verses he quotes. So now, when Nimi said like this, priests are praying for Nimi's body. And Nimi is saying, I don't want body. And devatas are responding now. Deva uchuhu Vedeha Ushyatam Kamam लोचने शुशरीरिणाम उन्मेषण निमेषाभ्याम लक्षितो अध्यात्म संस्थितः.
Demigod said, let Maharaj Nimi live without a material body. Let him live in a spiritual body as a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And according to his desire, let him be manifest or unmanifest to common materially embodied people.
So, demigods approved. Oh, Nimi has this mood. Let him live without a material body. No problem. Let him live in a spiritual body as a personal associate of the Lord. So, here the term spiritual body is sometimes taken to refer a ghostly body. An impious man who dies after sinful activities is sometimes condemned. Impious man, he may not get a gross body. He will be entrapped in a subtle body and then he will just move ahead. But here, Nimi is not like a ghost. Having no material body does not mean he is a he's in a ghostly existence. He's having a spiritual body, right? So, tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti surjuna. Lord can be seen or unseen according to his own transcendental desire. Similarly, a devotee being jivan mukta can be seen or not as he chooses. So here Nimi may not be visible to other people, but he's in his existence, he's existing and he is performing devotional service in such a spiritual consciousness. Then Atha Sri Krishna Namadina Nabhaved Grahyam Indriyet. So Krishna and his name, fame, qualities and paraphernalia cannot be materially understood. Unless one is advanced in spiritual life, one cannot see Krishna. Therefore, the ability to see Krishna depends on Krishna's mercy. The same privilege of being seen or unseen is reserved for devotees also. Right? Nimi also. Just like you can't see Krishna according to one's whims, similarly one cannot see devotees also, such great devotees like Nimi. So he is in such an existence, very special person. Thus he lived in his original spiritual body as an associate of the Lord, unseen by people of this world. Okay, that's what has happened to him. Ajar arajakabhayam runam manyamana maharshayaham deham mamantu sma nimehe kumaraha samajayatam.
Thereafter, to save the people from the danger of an unregulated government, the sages churned Maharaj Nimi's material body, from which, as a result, a son was born.
But Nimi chose to just retire. He's detached. And what will happen to the kingdom? People will be in danger. So the sages churned Nimi Maharaj's material body, from which a son was born. Now there are different cases. Sometimes you have to be responsible, right? And even on political grounds also. So some devotees who took that responsibility are glorified. He is doing his material duties also very wonderfully, very exemplary way. That is glorified. And on the other side, you see some devotees, they are not even bothered to take care of certain things and then they leave. That is their inner urge, right? You can't say he is right and he is wrong. In what mood are they doing? For example, Uttanapada retired even before Dhruva Maharaj got married also. Prachetas Vahi retired even before Nimi Maharaj got married also. Not Nimi, Prachetas got married. Prachetas even, they didn't complete their brahmachari training also. They didn't even come back to the father. So before that only he left. So all are, like depending on the specific mood and circumstances one is in, so different devotees are glorified. Yes, Prabhu, you had some other point.
My question is whether Nimi was a devotee earlier or after leaving the body he became a devotee. Because like when Vasishta cursed him, he also counter-cursed him. So the qualities of Tiraskrita, Viplabdha and all this, it's like he's under the control of anger. And then demigods give him the benediction that he will attain spiritual body. It's all like...
So... The only information we have about Nimi is this small chapter, and 11th canto also there is some information. But Nimi seems to be a great personality. It's not that after giving up his body only he became great devotee. That is, definitely he has become a great devotee after giving up the body. But before that also he must be having some devotional background. At the same time, why he became angry on Vasishta when Vasishta cursed? So, now, like, I don't have any reference of Acharya's commentary to give an answer there. How could he become so angry on his own spiritual master? Here, spiritual master, he's like a priest only, right? Vasishta is like a family priest for the Sun dynasty. But what... little bit what we can understand is even such great devotees also can become angry, right, momentarily. So that could happen at that level also. So we need to be careful. So if someone at that level can exhibit anger and not tolerate, and also he said that only because of remuneration from both parties you have become so greedy, and now you are cursing me also. So you are not qualified to be a priest. You are not qualified to be a spiritual master. So I curse you that your body also will fall. That's the whole context there. So beyond that, I don't know, if some other person knows some more references, any other references about this behavior. Yeah, the devotional background is there, but how could he curse? That was the point he is asking. Hare Krishna. Will of the Lord, inconceivable desire. Yeah, it's definitely will of the Lord. There is nothing wrong in that. Okay, so this Arajaka Bhayam, even when Anga Maharaj left the kingdom, because he could not rectify the misbehavior of his son Vena, so he left the kingdom in the middle. Then the sages took responsibility. So Brahmanas, they are very responsible to take care of the citizens also, but their way of taking care of citizens is through the administration, through the kings, through the Kshatriyas, right? But if Kshatriya is not there only to take care of citizens, so Brahmanas just extend themselves and then try to find out a Kshatriya who can take care of the citizens. Right? They take that responsibility also. So that's how all the sages in Anga Maharaj's kingdom, they churned Vena's body to bring out Prithu Maharaj. And here also the priests of Nimi Maharaj, they churned Nimi's body to bring out a son. Right? So like that, Brahmanas go one step ahead and take care of the political situation in the world also, to take care of citizens. And Prabhupada even writes in the fourth canto that if a Brahmana becomes indifferent to the situation in this world, he is like too irresponsible, he will have to get some reaction because of that. On the other hand, we also see that devotees perform devotional service totally being indifferent to political situation also. So weak spiritual movement cannot spread. Spreading of spiritual movement cannot wait for any political situation. So first we need to spread this movement. So that is also valid. So different devotees, different acharyas have different moods. Right? So with what consciousness, with what mood are they rendering service to Krishna? That's what Krishna sees. Right? It need not be some stereotype, this thing. What the common principles that everyone agrees to is Krishna is worshipable. Right? Bhakti is a supreme process. Right? Holy name is greatest. So these are like very standard principles. There is no compromise. Everybody agrees to it. But the exact details in which they perform devotional service may vary sometimes here and there. Sometimes Prabhupada gives a purport. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in Sararth Vaishnavi gives another purport. The perspective seems a little different also. That has to be accepted as variety. They don't contradict each other in terms of the core principles. But he presents one perspective and he presents another perspective. Both are valid perspectives. Apparently they seem little opposite, but that has to be seen as variety and not contradiction, right? Similarly, different devotees perform devotional service in different ways. They have different moods. All are valid. We need to respect the individuality of a person. Every person need not behave the same. They may be having the same goal. They may be having the same worshipable personality, worshipable Godhead, but the natures are different. That's where personalism is. They have their individuality. We need to respect like that. Just like the simple eating habits, different people have different varieties. What to speak of this bigger, vast area. So a Kshatriya is one who saves the citizens from being injured. In the so-called people's government, there is no trained Kshatriya king. As soon as someone strong accumulates votes, he becomes the minister or president without training from the learned brahmanas, expert in the shastras. So Prabhupada says, Kshatriya has to be twice born. Yesterday we have discussed this, right? Kshatriya has to be twice born. Brahmana has to be twice born. Even Vaishyas also have to be twice born. Means they have a birth, seminal birth, and they have to take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. Then he is considered a bona fide Kshatriya or a bona fide Brahmana. In the modern day, in Kali Yuga, Those who are in the ruling positions, they are not twice born. Oftentimes they are once born. Let's have once born people, they cannot rule. They cannot do justice to the administration of a kingdom. Only twice born person who has a bona fide spiritual master, who takes spiritual instruction and guidance from a bona fide spiritual master, only can administer the government and then take care of citizens properly. Right? Otherwise, there will be material welfare, there may be. Right? There could be material prosperity. There could be material advancement in different ways. But ultimately, what is the purpose of this creation? To enable the conditioned soul to go back home back to Godhead. Is it not? And Krishna has created these four varnas so that people can work according to their natural inclinations and thus go back to Godhead. That's the purpose of varnashrama. Right? If varnas are there and ashramas are there, ultimately to realize God and to go back to Godhead and to serve God. And this system is there so that different people with different natures can be accommodated. Right? Not everybody can do everything. But only natures are given prominence and Krishna is removed from the whole system only. What kind of varnashram system is that? Right? So once born people cannot establish. Whether they agree on varnashram or not, there will be intellectual class of people in a society, there will be mercantile class, there will be administrative class, there will be worker class. Whether they agree varnashram system or not. That, because Krishna has created it, that has to be present in a proper way or a degraded way. That will be present. But the efficacy of that system will come up only when twice born people are there. Right? Only when people are guided by a bona fide spiritual master, only when people are aligning themselves with spiritual scriptural instructions. Right? So that's the point Prabhupada is making here also. In a so-called people's government, there is no trained Kshatriya king. So training is not there. And as soon as someone strong accumulates votes, he becomes the minister or president without training from learned brahmanas expert in the shastras. So brahmana guidance, shastric guidance. Then only a king can operate. Without these two things, modern rulers, they may have training in how to accumulate votes, right? How to do cheating in the elections, right? How to bribe people so that they can get more votes. So they have full training in it. They have full intelligence. Their intelligence will function in that way very, very meticulously. But what is the message of Shastra? What are the Brahmanas and Acharyas saying? That they have no information. Right? So that Prabhupada, several times, wherever this Kshatriya topic has come, Prabhupada speaks about all these things. People like the government of Ramachandra and the government of Yudhishthira Maharaj and Parikshit, Ambarisha, Prahlada. So there are many instances of excellent government under a monarch. Gradually the democratic government is becoming unfit for the needs of the people. And therefore some parties are trying to elect a dictator. Okay. 13th verse. Read the translation.
Because he was born in an unusual way, the son was called Janaka. And because he was born from the dead body of his father, he was known as Vaideha. Because he was born from the churning of his father's material body, he was known as Mithila. And because he constructed a city as King Mithila, the city was called Mithila.
Next.
O King Parikshit, from Mithila came a son named Udavasu. From Udavasu, Nandivardhan. From Nandivardhan, Suketu. And from Suketu, Devavrata. From Devarat came a son named Brihadratha. And from Brihadratha, a son named Mahavirya, who became the father of Sudhriti. The son of Sudhriti was known as Drishtaketu. And from Drishtaketu came Hariyashva. And from Hariyashva came a son named Maru. The son of Maru was Pratipaka, and the son of Pratipaka was Kritaratha. From Kritaratha came Devamida, and from Devamida Vishruta, and from Vishruta Mahadriti. From Mahadriti was born a son named Kritiratha. From Kritiratha was born Maharoma, and from Maharoma came a son named Swarnaroma, and from Swarnaroma came Rashvaroma.
From Rashvaroma came a son named Siradhwaja, also called Janaka. When Siradhwaja was plowing a field, from the front of his plow, Sira, appeared a daughter named Sita Devi, who later became the wife of Lord Ramchandra. Thus he was known as Siradhwaja. The son
Janaka
of Sira...
Janaka Maharaj. Even the original king who came out of the body of Nimi was also called Janaka. Janaka is considered a title. Mithila is also considered a title. Like that. Next.
The son of Siradhwaja.
Mithila is the name of the kingdom, not title.
The son of Siradhwaja was Kushadhwaja, and the son of Kushadhwaja was King Dharmadhwaja, who had two sons, namely Kritadhwaja and Mitadhwaja. O Maharaj Parikshit, the son of Kritadhwaja was Keshidhwaja, and the son of Mitadhwaja was Khandikya. The son of Kritadhwaja was expert in spiritual knowledge, and the son of Mitadhwaja was expert in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Khandikya fled in fear of Keshidhwaja. The son of Keshidhwaja was Bhanuman, and the son of Bhanuman was Satadyumna. The son of Satadyumna was named Suchi. From Suchi, Sanadhwaja was born, and from Sanadhwaja came a son named Urjaketu. The son of Urjaketu was Aja, and the son of Aja was Purujit. The son of Purujit was Aristanemi, and his son was Srutayu. Srutayu begot a son named Suparshvaka, and Suparshvaka begot Chitraratha. The son of Chitraratha was Kshemadhi, who became the king of Mithila. The son of Kshemadhi was Samarat, and his son was Satyaratha. The son of Satyaratha was Upaguru, and the son of Upaguru was Upagupta, a partial expansion of the fire god. The son of Upagupta was Vasvananta. The son of Vasvananta was Yudha. The son of Yudha was Subhashana, and the son of Subhashana was Shruta. The son of Shruta was Jaya, from whom there came Vijaya. The son of Vijaya was Rita. The son of Rita was Sunaka. The son of Sunaka was Vithavya. The son of Vithavya was Dhriti, and the son of Dhriti was Bahulashva. The son of Bahulashva was Kriti, and his son was Mahavashi. Shukdev Goswami said, "My dear King Parikshit, all the kings of the dynasty of Mithila were completely in knowledge of their spiritual identity. Therefore, even though staying at home, they were liberated from the duality of material existence."
So this is most important verse. Sometimes in the ninth canto, we see a series of verses that are just mentioning the names. And some couple of chapters in this canto, they just mention a series of names. So why these names are being mentioned? So the kings in this dynasty were completely in knowledge of their spiritual identity. Because they are devotee kings, reading their names also is very purifying. So although they are staying at home, they were liberated from duality of material existence. Etevai Mithila Rajan Atma Vidya Visharadaha. They are Atma Vidya Visharadaha. So Prabhupada writes in this purport, "In this world, to distinguish between good and bad, happiness and distress is meaningless because they are manodharma, mental concoctions. Ultimately, whether it is good or bad, it is on a material platform, it is ultimately bad only. So because everything here is miserable and troublesome, to create an artificial situation and pretend it to be full of happiness is simply illusion." Then he quotes Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya Sitoshna Sukadukkada. "Those who are liberated being on the transcendental platform of rendering service to the Lord do not care about so-called happiness or distress." So all the kings in this Mithila, they are of that category. So they are very glorious. Hearing their names and knowing their activities is very purifying. So this is about the dynasty of Nimi Maharaj. Now we will go to the next chapter. King Pururava enchanted by Urvasi. Shri Shuka Uvacha Athata Shruyatam Rajan Vamshah Somasya Pavanah Yasmin Ailadayo Bhupah Kirtyante Punya Kirtayah.
Srila Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "O King, thus far you have heard the description of the dynasty of the sun god. Now hear the most glorious and purifying description of the dynasty of moon god. This description mentions kings like Aila, Pururava, of whom it is glorious to hear."
Again, Sukadeva Goswami says, it's glorious to hear. Pururava story is often considered a love story only. Right. Love story filled with lot of romance and sense gratification, described in a very graphic detail. However, to actually understand Pururava's story, you need to read 11th canto also. Then the story is complete. So, there is an episode called Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto. In that, Krishna personally describes about Pururava. So, Sukadeva Goswami described the love story, the romantical romance aspect of the story, but there is a detachment. After Sringara, there is Vairagya. So, the Vairagya episode was described by Krishna in the 11th canto in Uddhava Gita. So, then it will be complete.
Sahasrasirshah pumso, sirasah pumso, nabhi hridasaroruhat. Jatasyasit suto dhatur, atrirpitra samo gunaihi.
Lord Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, is also known as Sahasrasirsha Purusha. From the lake of his navel sprang a lotus on which Lord Brahma was generated. Atri, the son of Lord Brahma, was as qualified as his father.
So, Sukadeva Goswami is describing the moon dynasty. He begins the dynasty from Garbhodaksha Vishnu directly. From Garbhodaksha Vishnu, Brahma is born, Atri is born, from Brahma, Atri is born, and from Atri, Soma is born. When? Where was it described? Fourth canto, first chapter. You remember? Atri performs tapasya for 100 years standing on one leg. He had a desire to have a son as good as Jagadisha. I want Jagadisha, the controller of the universe, to be my son. And he doesn't know who is Jagadisha. Right? Without knowing the identity of the Lord, he offers prayers and then he desires to have such Jagadisha as his son. Then he meditates for 100 years, Atri and Anasuya. And three personalities, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all manifest in front of him. Then, after that, they said, all of us are Jagadisha. Right? I called only one person, why three people came here? He asked. He knows, who are they? He knows this is Brahma, he knows Shiva and Vishnu. By their symbolic representations, he could recognize who are they, but he doesn't have understanding who is the boss amongst the three. So we are not very much surprised, because even at that stage also, great learned sages also, they are not very well versed about the identity of the Supreme Lord. To understand that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead is not an easy thing. Just by Prabhupada's mercy, all of us have that understanding. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, this one simple line is inconceivable to most people in this planet. Even just few years back, before we came to Krishna consciousness, most people had different conceptions of who is God, who is ultimate God. Only Prabhupada's mercy that many people in this world are knowing, at least, that Krishna is Supreme Lord. Even Atri also could not know. Atri did not understand Brahma is superior, or Vishnu is superior, or Krishna is superior, or Shiva is superior. Bhrigu wanted, there was a big assembly of sages, so they selected Bhrigu. You go and decide who is the best amongst the three. Then Bhrigu went to Brahmalok and then Shivalok and then went to Vishnulok and then identified, Vishnu is supreme. Like that. So there is a kind of confusion at that stage also. He doesn't know. But his determination was strong. Because his determination was strong, Lord reciprocated with his enthusiasm and determination, and Lord became his son. Right? Vishnu became his son as Dattatreya. And Shiva's expansion became his son, that is Durvasa. And Atri got another son. Who is the another son? Soma, who is a partial expansion of Brahmaji. So Atri had three sons, who are the partial representation of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. They are Soma, Dattatreya and Durvasa. So now we are discussing the lineage of Soma, who is the son of Atri. Atri is the son of Brahma. And Soma is actually a partial representation of Brahmaji only. So what happened to Soma, we will see now. From Atri's tears of jubilation was born a son named Soma, the moon, who was full of soothing rays. Brahma appointed him the director of the Brahmanas, drugs and luminaries. So moon god was born from the mind of the Lord. Chandrama manaso jataha, chakshu suryo ajayataha. You remember this Purusha Sutta. Sahasra sirisha purushaha, sahasraksha sahasrapat. In that series this also will come. Chandrama manaso jataha. But here we find that Soma was born from the tears of the eyes of Atri. This appears contradictory. Soma is born from Lord's mind. That is one version. Soma is a partial representation of Brahma. Another version. Soma is born from the tears of Atri. Another version. So this appears contradictory. But actually it is not. For this birth of the moon is understood to have taken place in another millennium. Prabhupada says. When tears appear in the eyes because of jubilation, the tears are soothing. So Chakravarti Thakur says, here the word drigbhyaha means tears of jubilation. Next. Prabhupada also quotes 4th canto, 1st chapter. Just now we discussed it already. 4th verse. Sojayad rajasu yena vijitya bhavanatrayam patnim brihaspater darpat Taram nama haradbalat.
After conquering the three worlds, the upper, middle and lower planetary systems, Soma, the moon god, performed a great sacrifice known as the Rajasuya Yajna. Because he was very much puffed up, he forcibly kidnapped Brihaspati's wife, whose name was Tara.
Yesterday I was saying this, right? Soma, although he is born of Lord's mind, although he is born of a great sis Atri, although he is born of the as a partial representation of Brahma, still he was infatuated with lust. So when we are reading the descriptions of all these personalities, especially in the 9th canto, we should not offend any of them. To criticize or blaspheme or offend Soma is not within our jurisdiction. We are no one to do that. But seeing his behavior, we learn a lesson. Right? When great souls are performing mistakes, we should always remember three things. I told this several times. Can someone enumerate? Yes, you always raise hand. Someone else can say. We should not offend, correct. Okay. We should see mistake as a mistake. We should not lose discrimination. Just because such a great personality is doing that mistake, it must be bona fide. Let me also do it. Kidnapping Guru's wife is bona fide. Because Soma is doing it, let me also do it. So that is not the message that we have to take from it. Mistake has to be seen as mistake. What is the second point? We should learn the lesson, personal lesson. If that has, without offending them. So we should not disrespect the personality who is doing the mistake, considering his position. We should not consider his mistake as right. Third, if that happened to him, it can happen to me also. So I have to be very careful. So by doing this, he is giving a message to me. So these are the three things. One should not have a judgmental attitude, but one should not lose discrimination. Although requested again and again by Brihaspati, Soma did not return Tara. See, another. It's not that he kidnapped in a stealthy way and he's hiding somewhere out of fear of Brihaspati. It's quite known. Brihaspati came to know that his wife has been kidnapped by Soma. And Brihaspati went to Soma and said, please give my wife back. Then also he's not giving. Requested again and again. Deva Guruna, Yada sa Deva Guruna, Yachito, Bhikshnaso Mahat. Madat, right? Abhikshnasaha madat. Abhikshnasaha means again and again. Yachataha means begging. So here such a great Brahmana, who is the Deva Guru, who is the spiritual master of demigods, had to go and beg this demigod, Soma, for his wife. See, at that level also what kind of operations may happen. So Soma did not return Tara. This was due to his false pride, madat. Because of mada, he did not give. Natyaja tatkrite jangye suradhanava vigraha. Consequently, a fight ensued between demigods and demons. Soma is not a demon. Brihaspati is not a demon. How come a dispute between these two personalities caused a dispute between demigods and demons? Interesting, right? So Deva Guru and Devas are having some dispute and demigods came into picture. So one dispute between two people can cause such a great havoc that it can invite other communities also. It is not sticking to those two people only, depending on their positions. Now, if some people, say some labor, two laborers just fighting with each other, right, on the street, so it's between them. At the max, their families are involved. But if some very well-known people, say one chief minister and another chief minister of next state, they are fighting with each other, then there will be a big fight. Two kingdoms will have a fight. So Ravana and Ram, right, it was a problem between two. But entire monkey dynasty came there, right? Millions and millions of monkeys came. Sugriva became friend, right? So depending on your position, your mistake will have effect. Right? Someone who is very down to earth, Ajamil did some mistake that had an effect on his own family. But Diti did a mistake. Diti was the wife of a Prajapati, Kashyapa. She had more responsibility to act. When she does a mistake, entire universe was suffering because she gave birth to Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Even before they came out of her womb also, a lot of darkness spread throughout the universe. Demigods were suffering. So as one is progressing in devotional service, as one's age is increasing and experience is increasing, one's responsibility too should increase. Right? The higher is one's profile, the more is his responsibility to behave nicely. Right? Especially you should not get into this kind of disputes or do some misbehavior. So there was a fight between demigods and demons. Because of enmity between Brihaspati and Shukra, Shukra took side of moon god. See? The friend of my enemy becomes my enemy. Right? So, friend of my enemy becomes my enemy. And the enemy of my friend becomes my friend. Right? This is the rule. So, Shukracharya and Brihaspati, they have natural enmity. One is Deva Guru, one is Rakshasa Guru. So now Soma became like Soma is against Brihaspati. So Shukracharya said, I will support Soma because he is my opponent. Suddenly he just. And because Deva Guru, Rakshasa Guru is supporting this Soma, all Rakshasas also supported Soma. That's how there is a big fight. So because of enmity between Brihaspati and Shukra, Shukra took the side of moon god and was joined by the demons. But Lord Shiva, because of affection for the son of his spiritual master, joined the side of Brihaspati and was accompanied by all ghosts and hobgoblins. The moon is one of the demigods, but to fight against other demigods, he took the assistance of the demons. Shukra, being an enemy of Brihaspati, also joined the moon god to retaliate in wrath against Brihaspati. To counteract the situation, Lord Shiva, who was affectionate towards Brihaspati, joined Brihaspati. The father of Brihaspati was Angira, from whom Shiva has received knowledge. Angira gave some knowledge to Shiva, and Shiva, out of gratitude to Angira, he went and supported Brihaspati. So, now there are some friendly exchanges. Now we have six loving exchanges, right? Dadati, Pratigrahanati, Guhyamakhyati, Prichati, Bhunte, Bhojayate, Chaiva. Whenever there are some exchanges between two people or two parties, a bondage is formed. An obligation is formed. The positive side of that is love, affection, gratitude, friendship, Vaishnava relationships. That is one side. Other side is obligation and becoming forcefully obliged to do something which you are not, which you don't like to do, just to please the other person. So they are like obligatory relationships, right? Although you are not at all entitled to do, but still you have to take support. For example, in the 10th canto, there is one demon called Vanasur. He had a daughter, Usha. And Usha got into a love affair with Aniruddha, who was the grandson of Krishna. So, now Banasur want to fight against with Krishna, right? So Krishna came and then Sankarsana, Balramji,
Then Pradyumna and all the Dwarkavasis came, Dwarka warriors came to fight with Banasur. And Banasur happens to be a devotee of Shiva. So Shiva took the side of Banasur and fought against Krishna. And Shiva is such an advanced devotee, Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam Yathasambhu. The most exalted Vaishnava is Shiva. But he is fighting against Vishnu because of his obligation. Right? So we need to understand when we are taking favors from someone, so we need to be extremely careful, especially in preaching and other transactions. We should not give our words to people who are not very less intelligent or having some exploitative mentality. Right? We may have to miss certain spiritual privileges or certain opportunities for services when we are obliged to some less intelligent people who engages in some other kind of services. Right? So we need to be extremely careful. Dasarath Maharaj gave a benediction, right? Gave a word to Kaikeyi. Two boons. Whatever you want, you ask. No problem. Right? Whenever you want, you ask. She said, I am self-satisfied now. I am under the protection of such an able husband. I don't want anything now. So Dasarath Maharaj said, okay, fine. My wife is so nice. So after some time, same Kaikeyi told Dasarath Maharaj, send your son Ram to Vanvas for 14 years and enthrone my son Bharat as the king of Ayodhya. Then Dasarath Maharaj got a shock of his life. Eventually he had to leave his body because of this obligation to Kaikeyi. So when we are obliged to some less intelligent people, so we need to suffer in future. Right? We need to be extremely careful by while giving our words or committing to people. Right? They may exploit us, right, for their personal purposes, selfish desires. So these are some obligations in this world. So Shiva is obliged to take care of, to take side of Brihaspati and get into a fight. And Moon God took the side of this Shukracharya, or Shukracharya took the side of Moon. Sarva Deva Gunopeto Mahendro Guru Manvayat Sura Sura Vinashobhut Samarastara Kamayaham.
King Indra, accompanied by all the kinds of demigods, joined the side of Brihaspati. Thus there was a great fight, destroying both demons and demigods only for the sake of Tara, Brihaspati's wife.
One woman can cause such a havoc. Right? Because, I mean, not woman, attachment to a woman. That's the point. Right? We can't blame woman. Because we should blame man's attachment to woman. Or woman's attachment to man. Attachment to opposite sex can cause such great havoc. So Ravana was attached to opposite sex. Ravana was attached to Sita. There is a big war that happened in Ramayana. So now here, Soma became attached to Tara, Brihaspati's wife. So there is a big war. So anyone who uses little common sense and intelligence, so he will condemn Soma. Right? How can he kidnap Guru's wife? Right? And how can I take side of such a person? But see, the whole... And anyone can condemn Ravana also. The cause for which we are fighting is so stupid. If any Rakshasa would have used his common sense, they would leave Ravana's army. Right? But no one used that. But here, because of their attachment and envy and hatred, the Shukracharya was just against Brihaspati. That was the only reason why he is taking the side of Soma. He is not considering for what cause am I taking his side. No. He is my enemy. He is against someone else now. That fellow will become my friend. For what cause he is fighting, it's not my issue to assess. Like that. So Shukracharya, although he is a Brahmana, great Brahmana, he took the side of Soma. And all the demons also took side of Soma. And also we need to see, when someone does a mistake, he cannot attract any great souls. Only demonic people will take his side. Maybe one side, another angle to it is that. So when Brahma was fully informed by Angira about the entire incident, Angira is another intelligent person. He went and told Brahmaji. He severely chastised Moon God. Thus, Lord Brahma delivered Tara to her husband, who could then understand that she was pregnant. So now it seems that thus Lord Brahma delivered Tara to her husband. It seems story ended there. No, who could then understand that she was pregnant? Another story began now. Another discussion began now. So fight ended because Brahma intruded. So when two low level people are fighting, when a higher authority comes and then solves the problem, then they all become a little respectful, that higher man. So demons also are devoted to Brahmaji. And devotees also, demigods also are devoted to Brahmaji. Both of them are having some respect for Brahma. Similarly, Narada, there are some personalities who are respected by everyone. So they need to be, their words have to be taken seriously. So demon said, okay, we'll not fight, we'll go. Demigods also said, we'll go. Now, another problem is Tara became pregnant. Tara became pregnant because of whom? Soma or Brihaspati? That is the question now. Brihaspati said, you foolish woman, your womb, which was meant for me to impregnate, has been impregnated by someone other than me. Immediately deliver your child. Immediately deliver it. Be assured that after the child is delivered, I shall not burn you to ashes. When a woman is pregnant, although she does abominable mistake, you cannot punish her. One has to wait for... Women are not punishable at all. So even if someone becomes so angry and then you have to punish, they have to wait for that pregnant woman to give birth to your child. So Indra did not cause any harm to Kritadyuti. Not Kritadyuti, who is that? Kayadu. So he was safely taking Kayadu to heavenly planets only so that she can deliver child, and then after child's delivery then he can kill the child. So pregnant woman is not harmed. Right? Woman is generally not harmed at all. But here he says, I will not burn you to ashes, don't worry. Before you, even after you deliver the child also, I will not burn you to ashes. So Brihaspati says, so I know that although you are unchaste, you wanted a son. Therefore I shall not punish you. So woman definitely has a desire to become a mother. So you are unchaste, but still I can tolerate that offense. But you should tell the truth. So Tara was married to Brihaspati, and therefore as chaste woman, she should have been impregnated by him. But instead, she preferred to be impregnated by Soma, and therefore she was unchaste. Although Brihaspati accepted Tara from Brahma, when he saw that she was pregnant, he wanted her to deliver a son immediately. So Tara certainly very much feared her husband, and she thought she might be punished after giving birth. Thus Brihaspati assured her that he would not punish her. Okay. So, we need to understand that even in those days, both men and women, demigods and demons, we have so many examples amongst them also who became lusty. Ahalya was attracted to Indra. Indra was definitely attracted to Ahalya, but when he came in disguise, Ahalya did not say, get lost. After she detected that he is not my husband also, she encouraged him. So that means she also had some desire to associate with Indra. And here, Tara also associated with Soma. So we can see that both women and men, so Soma had this lust towards Tara. And who is that? Ravana had lust to Sita. And this Indra had lust towards Ahalya. So like that, we see several examples that this lust is such a... powerful feeling or emotion or whatever you may call right, in the conditioned souls, that it cannot leave a person in the conditioned state, even if he is in the body of a demigod, even if he is staying in the higher planets, right, even if he is the associate of the Lord. Kala Krishna Das was attracted to Bhattaharis even when he was serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada writes in that purport, not in that purport, in a later chapter, Swarup Damodar Goswami and Ramanand Rai were requesting Lord Chaitanya, on your way to Vrindavan, who will carry your water pot, who will carry your clothes, right? You will be absorbed in ecstasy, so you should take some assistant. Then Lord Chaitanya immediately says, what assistant you will give me? Earlier you gave me one assistant, Nityanand Prabhu gave me one assistant, Kala Krishna Das,
So he went to Bhattahari's and his mind was not controlled, and I had to go and protect him. He is supposed to be my assistant, he made me his servant. So I can't accept any servants, I will go alone, he says. Then Ramanandarai and Sarup Damodar Goswami just fervently request Lord Chaitanya, no, 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 this time we will give a Sarala Brahman, very simple-hearted, plain, mind-controlled, sense-controlled Brahman. He will not bother you at all. He will just carry your water pot and cook for you. We just be observing your bhajan. We assure you that he will not cause any disturbance to you. Then he accepted. In that context, Prabhupada writes, unless one is determined to control his senses, he can be distracted even in the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if he is not determined, even Krishna cannot protect him, he says. So these are all very deep statements, very scary statements also. When I read these purports, I become very scared. So now here in the heavenly planets also we see that this is happening. Sukadeva Goswami continued. By Brihaspati's order, Tara, who was very much ashamed, immediately gave birth to the child, who was very beautiful, with a golden bodily hue. Both Brihaspati and Moon God desired that beautiful child. Another problem. So it was known that only Soma impregnated. And known means known to Tara. Right? Others are not. Brihaspati was only doubting at this point. And when she delivered the child immediately, how can she immediately deliver the child just because someone else is ordering? I can't say that. So Diti held her pregnancy for 100 years, right? So in those days they have that ability. See, although they are such powerful people, still all this lust, envy, greed, pride, all these are there. So Brahmaji has created all these negative feelings also in the beginning of the creation. And they are there throughout. All 14 planetary systems are covered with these softwares. Right? So, Sasar Jangre Andha Tamishram Atha Tamishram Adikrit Maha Mohamcha Mohamcha Tamascha Agnana Vrittayaha. These five kinds of nisains and this envy, greed, irreligion, anger, so arrogance, all these qualities also Brahmaji has created. So all these are there in all 14 planetary systems. They manifest in different degrees, in different flavors. Right? So power is one thing. Anartha is another thing. Just because he has a lot of power, mystic power, etc., that doesn't mean he is freed from anarthas. Just because he does not have any power, he is such a simple human being in this earthly planet who doesn't have even material opulence also, that doesn't mean that he has all kinds of anarthas. Right? So power is different and these anarthas are different. Anarthas can be present in anyone and power, depending on one's background, they are also present. So here, when she delivered a child, both fathers, so-called fathers, they started claiming the child. Again fighting. Someone read the translation.
Fighting again broke out between Brihaspati and the moon god, both of whom claimed, "This is my child, not yours." All the saints and demigods present asked Tara whose child the newborn baby actually was. But because she was ashamed, she could not immediately answer.
See, 100 people are coming and asking a woman, right, who is the father of your child? That's such an embarrassing question. She was totally ashamed and embarrassed and thoroughly humiliated. Right? When someone engages in an illicit affair, and when so many people come to know that, then there is a definitely embarrassment and humiliation. So Tara is facing that now. Then the child became very angry. Right? So even child also, how can a newborn child becomes angry? Become angry. So all this you can just understand that they also have some developed consciousness, or maybe after taking birth, again immediately he grew, we don't know. So the child then became angry and demanded his mother to immediately tell the truth. "You unchaste woman, what is the use of your unnecessary shame? You are feeling so embarrassed and ashamed to tell the truth, but this much shame should be there before committing any mistake, right? So why do you not admit your fault? Immediately tell me about your faulty behavior," child had to say. So Tara became very ashamed. Then again, whenever there is some problem, right,
When the ground level people are unable to solve, the top authority has to come. Brahmaji has come to again. So Brahma then brought Tara to a secluded place. No, in front of everyone she is unable to say, so I will do the needful. So Brahma took Tara to a secret place and pacified her, and he asked, to whom the child actually belonged? See, Brahmaji, how much tolerance he had to exhibit. When you are in a leadership position and when ground level people are doing goof up after goof up, sometimes so silly problems also might happen. Just failure to use little common sense can cause a lot of havoc, and the superior authority has to come and solve it. So that becomes very austere for Brahmaji. Brahmaji had to come again. Just now he came to solve one problem. Again, after she gave birth to another child, again another problem came. So he came. She replied very slowly, this is the son of Soma, the moon god, not Brihaspati. Then moon god immediately came and took the child. Because the child was so beautiful, so they want to claim it. So Parikshit, when Brahma saw that the child was deeply intelligent, he gave him the name Buddha. Now there is a cause for celebration also. Behind all this embarrassment, we have to celebrate the birth of the child also. An intelligent child is born, he has to be named. Namakaran ceremony has to be done. So before he found out his name, he had to find out his father, this child. So his name was Buddha. The moon god, the ruler of stars, enjoyed great jubilation because of this son. So thereafter, so this is the story of Buddha, Buddha's birth, then Tara, Brihaspati, Shukracharya, the demons, then Soma god, Brahmaji, all these are involved in this small incident. So read the translation.
One purpose Srila Prabhupada mentions, this womb of a woman is like a field, and even if someone else impregnates, then it will remain the property of owner, that is the husband. So in this case, then it should be given to, as per that logic, it should be given to...
Here some other logic is used. Just now, so much discussion we had. Ganganath Prabhu also asked some question. According to that logic, how can this happen? In different contexts, different logics are used, right? So here, moon both wanted to have the child. Then mother said, he is that person's child. Then father came and claimed, done. Discussion closed, right? Now again, now you are, again Brahma. Now if you raise this question, again Brahmaji has to come and solve. Okay, read the translation.
Thereafter, from Buddha, through the womb of Ila, a son was born named Pururava, who was described in the beginning of the ninth canto. When his beauty, personal qualities, magnanimity, behavior, wealth and power were described by Narada in court of Lord Indra, the celestial woman Urvashi was attracted to him. Pierced by arrow of Cupid, she thus approached him. Having been cursed by Mitra and Varuna, the celestial woman Urvasi had acquired the habits of human being. Therefore, upon seeing Pururava, the best of males, whose beauty resembled that of Cupid, she controlled herself and then approached him. When King Pururava saw Urvasi, his eyes became jubilant in the ecstasy of joy, and hairs on his body stood on end. With mild, pleasing words, he spoke to her as follows.
I think it's 12 o'clock. We'll discuss Pururava episode after a break. So we have one. Read the translation. 15th and 16th verse. Read once again.
King Pururava said, O most beautiful woman, you are welcome. Please sit here.
Read 15th translation.
Thereafter, from Buddha, through the womb of Ila, a son was born named Pururava, who was described in the beginning of the ninth canto. When his beauty, personal qualities, magnanimity, behavior, wealth, and power were described by Narada in the court of Lord Indra, the celestial woman Urvashi was attracted to him.
Mm.
Pierced by the arrow of Cupid, she thus approached him.
Mm. So Buddha married Ila, and there was a son named Pururava.
Who is Ila? Sudyumna. So Sudyumna went to Ilavrata Varsha, and according to Parvati's desire, once Parvati was intimately associating with Shiva, and some sages came to meet Shiva, and then she was a little ashamed, and then she requested Shiva, so no one should come here, no man should come here. If a man comes here, he should become a woman, right? Then Shiva sanctioned that desire, and Sudyumna, without knowing this, he went to that place, and he became a woman. Then Vasishta went and begged on behalf of Sudyumna and said, "Hey, he is a prince, you made him princess, right? How will the kingdom happen?" So then Shiva said, "Okay, fine, no problem. For 1 month he can be male, 1 month he can be female." So when he was female, her name is Ila. When he was male, his name is Sudyumna. When he was a female as Ila, he gave birth to Pururava from Buddha. So then this Pururava is a very beautiful, magnanimous, wealthy, powerful character. Then Narada Muni, right, he is always there, all pervading, in all cantos. He went and spoke about this to Indra. Right? Then Urvasi heard the whole thing. Urvasi was in Indralok, right? So then she became attracted to him and she approached. Now, see, the love story began from Urvasi's side only. So having been cursed by Mitra and Varuna, Urvasi acquired habits of a human being. Therefore, upon seeing Pururava, the best of males, whose beauty resembled that of Cupid, she controlled herself and then approached him. When Pururava saw Urvasi, his eyes became jubilant. In the ecstasy of joy, and the hairs on his body stood on end with... It's like seeing when Krishna's darshan is there, Vishnu's darshan is there, so many devotees also experience this kind of ecstasy, right? That is described. Now, this is happening in front of a woman. So, with mild, pleasing words, he spoke to her as follows. There are 10 effects of Cupid. They will come in the 10th canto. In the 10th canto, when Krishna entered the streets of Mathura, all the Mathura ladies were seeing Krishna. Someone can open 10.44, 45, somewhere it comes. 10 effects of Cupid. Chakshuraga, you can type in for you. Chakshuraga, and that is the first thing. It all begins with eyes. When someone sees the form of opposite sex with eyes, there's an attraction created there. So after that, there are other 10 stages. Then finally, it ends up with death. So these 10 stages of influence by Cupid can happen in one's relationship with Krishna, and a perverted reflection of that can happen in the case of conditioned souls also. So in Ajamil's case, all these 10 effects happen, right? So the last one is not technically death in the case of a pure devotee who is getting attracted to Krishna. You got the point, well, read one by one. Chakshuraga.
Chakshuraga
is attraction by eyes, right? When one sees the opposite form, then there is attraction. Next.
Prathamam chitta sangas.
Chitta sangat. So first, one will come in contact through eyes, then he gets attracted.
Intense attachment.
And chitta sangha is intense attachment in the mind. Third.
Tathota sankalpaha.
Sankalpa. There is a strong determination to associate with that opposite sex. I want to attain that object.
Then
fourth,
Nidra Chedas.
Nidra Cheda, he cannot sleep properly. Right? Fifth.
Tanuta.
Tanuta is he becomes emaciated. Right? Because he is not sleeping properly, he is not eating properly, he is constantly thinking right about the beloved. So he becomes emaciated. He or she, whoever. Next.
Next is Vishaya Nivrittis.
Vishaya Nivritti means he will lose attachment in any other external objects. Right? Next.
Next is Trapanasaha.
Trapanasaha means he becomes ashamed. The person becomes completely ashamed. Where am I standing? So sometimes the gopis, they would just go in public also. When Krishna was being taken away by Akrura, gopis went in the public on the roads. Some gopis were lying on the floor, on the road, and saying that if you want to go to Mathura, cross over our bodies. Right? You can go over our dead bodies only. And some people were catching horses and beating the horses. Some people just dragged the charioteer down and then started beating him. So like that, gopis were just, they just came out. Right? They will, the shame will not obstruct them. Next.
Next is Unmad.
Unmad is madness.
Madness.
Next.
Next is Murcha.
Murcha is fainting. Fainting out of love. Next.
Becoming stunned. Then is Mrityr.
Mrityu is Mrityu, but it will not technically happen in one's love with Krishna. So these are the 10 stages of Cupid. So this can ideally happen in one's relationship with Krishna. But a perverted way is, in relationship with the opposite sex in this material world also, it will happen. Purport number you can say? 10, 42, 40. Purport. All the 10 stages are described. This happened in Ajamil's case. Now, some of them you can see in this thing also. Yesterday we discussed about infatuation. There is a stage of infatuation or obsession where one cannot see faults in others. One's best nature will come out. So all this will... So now you can see Pururava becoming extremely tolerant, right, in his relationship with Urvasi. Let's see what happens.
Prabhuji, is there any, about this curse of Mitra
and Varuna to Urvasi?
Is there any detail about
any background? We can see Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment. I don't think it's there. I didn't note none also. We can see. Someone can do research. Assignment. Now Pururava is saying, Swagatam te vararohe Asyatam karavamakim Sambravam Sambramsva Maya Sakam Maya Sakam Ratir Nau Shaswati Samah.
King Pururuva said, O most beautiful woman, you are welcome. Please sit here and tell me what I can do for you. You may enjoy with me as long as you desire. Let us pass our life happily in a sexual relationship.
She's too direct. He immediately said, as soon as he saw Urvasi, and also the Urvasi also did not come like a chaste, respectable woman, right, who is the wife of someone else. She also came in front of him alone with a desire to enjoy with Urvasi, with Pururava. So Pururava immediately got attracted to her through eyes, and then in my mind has attachment. Immediately he proposed, as long as you desire, you can just enjoy with me. Ratir nau shashvatihi samaha. So for so many years, shashvatihi samaha. For long years we can enjoy with each other. Then Urvasi is saying,
Tasyastvayina sajjeta Mano drishtischa sundara Yatangantaram asadhyam Chyavateha riramshaya.
Urvashi replied, O most handsome man, who is the woman whose mind and sight would not be attracted by you? If a woman takes shelter of your chest, she cannot refuse to enjoy with you in a sexual relationship.
Now in this context you can compare this whole conversation or episode with the union of Devahuti and Kardama. Kardama performed 10,000 years of austerities, devotional service, not like some non-devotional austerities. They are devotional austerities to please Lord Vasudeva. So Brahmaji ordered Kardama, you create progeny. So immediately he did not find a wife. He performed 10,000 years of bhakti. Then the Lord came and he asked the Lord, my dear Lord, my father ordered me to create progeny, so I want your sanction and your assistance. So I have a desire to get a good wife who has samana shila. Then Lord said, yes, Day after tomorrow, Swayambhu Manu along with his wife Shatrupa will come here. They will offer their daughter to you, Devahuti. So, not only that, I will become your son because of your devotional service. So, here Kardama Muni had a desire to get a suitable wife. And after Kardama Muni, after Swayambhu Manu got Devahuti there, then Swayambhu Manu gave several reasons. So, my dear Kardama, you have not taken a vow to become a Naishtika Brahmachari. So you are a Upakarvana Brahmachari. Naishtika Brahmachari means he will remain Brahmachari throughout life. Upakarvana Brahmachari means he will remain Brahmachari up to certain stage of life. After that he will get married. So you are like that, Upakarvana Brahmachari. So you can marry. Second, you did not come to me, I only came to you. So intelligent people, when something is offered to them, when something comes to them of its own accord, they will not refuse it, especially when they are in need of it. So you should not reject it. So accept it. And if you don't accept it now, and later your need becomes desperate, then such a person has to go to another miser and then ask him. And when he goes and asks, then that is a little, what to say, disrespectful. He may be neglected. So it's not considered a first-class marriage. A first-class marriage is when the girl's father would bring the girl and offer respectfully to son-in-law, and son-in-law accepts. So second-class marriage or lower-class marriage is when the girl, when the boy himself goes to father and then asks, please give your daughter to me. Right? That's what happened in Saubari Muni's case. And the girl's father may or may not be willing to give such a girl to such a son-in-law, because when he is coming and asking, that's very little shameful. When Saubari Muni went to Mandhata and asked him, I want to marry, you give your daughter to me. Then Mandhata did not immediately say, no, now how can I give my daughters to such a austere sage, brahmana, he looks very old and very emaciated and thin like that, so my daughters may not be interested. But if I say no, brahmana may be offended and he may feel bad, he may curse me also. But how can I say no? I can't say yes also, I can't say no also. Then immediately Mandhata said, I don't mind, but I want to get my daughters married to a person whom they like. So you can directly go to my daughters, and if they like you, you can marry. So that was the proposal given to. So very intelligently he diverted. But Saubari is also intelligent, he understood. Oh, he's hesitating to give his daughters to me. Then he displayed his mystic power. He turned himself into a very handsome man. So one messenger came and then took this Saubari Muni to this daughters of Mandhata, 50 daughters. On the way he transformed himself, and the daughters saw this handsome man. They just jumped and they started quarreling with each other. I will marry, I will marry, I will marry, I will marry. Then all of them got married to Saubari. So, but anyways, the point is, such kind of marriage is not very respectable. When the boy himself goes and begs for a girl in charity. Right? Same thing happened in 9th canto. Later chapters also it comes. One sage wanted to marry, and the king said, I cannot give my daughter in marriage to you. But one condition, on one condition only I can give. What is that? You get 1,000 horses that has black ear. Then only I can give my daughter to you. Then the sage, by his mystic power, he immediately gets 1,000 horses with black ear, and then he gets married. So like that. So now coming back to the main loop of Devahuti and Kardama. There, Kardama Muni said that, my dear Swayambhu Manu, yes, you have rightly noticed my desire to marry. So I have a desire to marry, and who else is there other than Devahuti? She is so beautiful and she is so chaste. She is coming from a wonderful dynasty, Swayambhu Manu dynasty. She is the sister of Priyavrata and Uttanapada. So I can definitely accept her hand. Just by seeing an effulgence of her beauty, a great Gandharva named Vishwavasu, who was traveling in an airplane, he just fell down. So Devahuti was playing ball game on her terrace. And this fellow is traveling on an airplane and saw, and then he fell down from there. He saw with attachment, that's an offense, so he fell down. So he quoted all that story. So apparently,
the whole conversation seems that Kardamuni is so excited to marry Devahuti. And Devahuti also is very much meditating on Kardamuni, and then she is also very eager to marry. She has heard all the qualities of Kardamuni from Narada. Again, Naradamuni is there also. So Naradamuni told Kardamuni's qualities to Devahuti, and Devahuti got attracted to Kardamuni. But the difference is, Urvasi had the qualities of Pururava from Naradamuni, and Devahuti had the qualities of Kardamuni from Naradamuni. However, Devahuti expressed her desire to her father. My dear father, I want to get married. Then Swayambhu Manu brought her daughter to Kardamuni and respectfully offered Devahuti to Kardamuni. And there is no super excitement for a sexual relationship there. Because Kardamuni said he glorified the beauty of Devahuti and then he accepted her wonderful position. But immediately he said, I will marry her with a condition. As soon as she gets some children, I will go. Right? I will go to Renon's daughter. So before marriage, he did 10,000 years of bhakti yoga. After marriage, he wants to perform household life till they get children, and immediately after that, he wants to renounce. Right? So his main intention is to perform bhakti towards the Supreme Lord, and householder life and then begetting children was the main purpose of accepting a wife, and he led it in an ideal way. So that was a respectable union. But here, bhakti is now nowhere seen here. Right? Immediately only appreciation of beauty of each other is mentioned. Urvasi got attracted to Pururava only by hearing his beauty. And Pururava got attracted to Urvasi just by seeing her beauty. And they are directly speaking about sexual relationship only. There is no discussion about progeny. There is no discussion about renunciation. There is no discussion about performing bhakti to the Lord. So Narada Muni is also involved in speaking these qualities, but still the whole conversation is totally diverted towards some sensual activity only. So householder life is not bad. Sex life is not bad. Right? Appreciating each other's beauty when couple meet, that is also not bad. Provided one's intention is to have that union only to procreate good children and having Krishna's worship as their primary object in life. But here in this particular episode we see that Pururava and Urvasi are uniting with each other purely based on bodily relationship. Yet Pururava is our hero. Yayati is our hero. Because after such a long episode of sensual enjoyment, at the end they would realize what is good, right? What is the ultimate goal of life? That is Krishna consciousness. They will get frustrated with this material enjoyment and they will take full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is why their stories are mentioned in Bhagavatam. Although we have compared and contrasted between Pururava Urvasi case and Kardama and Devahuti's case, both episodes are spoken by same Sukadeva Goswami and they are mentioned in Bhagavatam. If that episode is there in Bhagavatam, why this episode is also there in Bhagavatam? So, ultimately both are culminating in pure devotional service. Right? Ultimately, Pururava gives up his attachment to Urvasi and then takes shelter of Krishna exclusively. And Krishna himself speaks of his story, Aila Gita. Right? So, no episode in Bhagavatam, although apparently it is seemingly very romantic and all the other things are there, still the conclusion of all these episodes is glorification of Bhakti Yoga, glorification of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this story is also important. So in what way it is important? If one has undue attraction towards the beauty of opposite sex and if one is lost, he will lose focus on his material responsibilities also and spiritual responsibilities also. And that is not good. What one should not do is there in this chapter. Right? And by reading the Aila Gita, entire
feelings of renunciation and detachment, virakti bhav of Aila or Pururava, we get more lessons there in the 11th canto. Right? So we need to see that, see this whole episode from that perspective. So Urvasi is saying, when a beautiful man and woman unite together and embrace one another, how within these three worlds can they check their sexual relationship? So 7.9.45 says, Yan maithunati grihamedi sukham hitucham kandu yane nakarayo eva dukkha dukkham. So trupyanti neha krupana bahudukkha bhajam. So Prahlad Maharaj says in his prayers, so grihamedi sukham hitucham, he condemns the itch like sensation of this sensual attraction between man and woman in this world. Then Rishabhadev even more graphically says that pumsam striyam mithuni bhavametam tayor mitaha hridaya granthi mahuhu. Although there are so many reasons for attachment and entanglement in this material world, the topmost reason is the attraction towards opposite sex. That is the most entangling reason. Right? The conditioned soul can be entangled to the maximum possible extent if he is attached to opposite sex. So that is the message of Bhagavatam. Repeatedly it is mentioned. So how graphic, how deep is this attachment is very graphically described in these episodes. Someone should not say, why this kind of episode is there in Bhagavatam? Right? How can Sukadeva Goswami speak like this? How can Parikshit Maharaj hear this at the end of his life? Right? There is significance. Right? It's very graphically described so that we understand. Right? And we need to read till the end. That's another important point. We should not close in the middle only. So we should read till the end, not of the chapter, not of the canto, till end of Bhagavatam. Right? Because the actual conclusion of this episode is there in the 11th canto, not in the 9th canto. Read 21st translation.
My dear King Pururava, please give protection to these two lambs who have fallen down with me. Although I belong to the heavenly planets and you belong to earth, I shall certainly enjoy sexual union with you. I have no objection to accepting you as my husband, for you are superior in every respect.
So, generally, someone coming from heavenly planets, they are extremely more beautiful, they have better qualities, right? But still, when they are inclined to unite with someone on the earthly planet, there must be really special reasons. When Purvachitti came to engage, to unite with Agnidhara, that was Brahmaji's sanction. Brahmaji had sent Purvachitti. So my devotee, Agnidhara, wants a relationship with someone who is very elevated from the higher planets. He is Pitruloka Kama. So Purvachitti got attracted to Agnidhara. Here Urvasi is getting attracted to Pururava. In one sense it is because of she developed some human qualities, habits of a human being because of Mitra and Varuna. Right, that is like one aspect. And she was carried away by the physical features and qualities of Pururava also. Right? When the lust is so deep, one loses discrimination. Right? How can I, coming from heavenly planets, associate with someone who is an earthly being? That kind of dynasty differences are also not there. Right? So because dynasty or whatever background, interplanetary essential relationship, right? So one loses discrimination. That's one aspect of it. So Prabhupada says there are various planets and various atmospheres within the universe. So heavenly planet from which Urvasi descended was different from the atmosphere of earth. Indeed, the inhabitants of heavenly planets are certainly far superior than inhabitants of earth. Nonetheless, Urvasi agreed. So a woman who finds a man with superior qualities may accept a man as her husband. So another point is superior qualities. Although she is from a superior community, Pururava is having superior qualities. So that's another reason Prabhupada highlights. So the combination of a male and female is worthwhile if the qualities of both are on equal level. Next, read 22nd translation.
Urvashi said, my dear hero, only preparations made in ghee, clarified butter, will be my eatables, and I shall not want to see you naked at any time except at the time of sexual intercourse. The great-minded King Pururava accepted these proposals.
Mm.
So she had some conditions. After all, she's coming from higher planet. She wants to eat everything in ghee only. No oil. No oil cooked food. Right? So even if ghee is not available, we'll have to go to some other place and then get ghee and then cook. Right? I can't eat anything other than ghee. And also, you should not appear naked in front of me. So the great-minded Pururava accepted these proposals. Okay. So when proposal comes, star, conditions apply. So whatever may be your conditions, I'm okay. Is this. Aho rupam aho bhavo naraloka vimohanam kona seveta manujo devim tvam svayam agatam. Aho rupam aho bhavo. He says, you have such wonderful rupa, physical beauty. Bhava means emotions, right? Gestures, right? So they are also very wonderful. Naraloka vimohanam. You are attracted to the entire human society. Kona seveta manujo. Who can reject you, my dear Urvasi? Who on the earth would not agree to serve a demigoddess like you? Serve. He is speaking about service here. So service here is basically having sensual relation like that. And Prabhupada also says that inhabitants of heavenly planets would not eat abominable things like meat and eggs, which are prepared in oil. They eat only clarified butter, like that. Next, 24th verse. Read the translation.
Sudeva Goswami continued, "The best of human beings, Prurava, began freely enjoying the company of Urvashi, who engaged in sexual activities with him in many celestial places, such as Chitrartha and Nandankanana, where the demigods enjoy."
So they went to some good spots to enjoy. Now the ambience also has an effect, right? When someone is, for example, this fellow Agnidhra went to Mandara mountain to do tapasya, to do chanting, right? And that's a place known for demigoddesses to descend, and then they will traverse there, they will just stroll around there. So it's not a place for austerity. It's very clear that he went to find out a girl only. Right? That was very clear in his case. Here also, Kardama Muni and Devahuti, when they were uniting, they had when they got married, Devahuti wanted to serve Kardama Muni so nicely. And then she was serving. So, Patim Ingita Kovida, then Vishrujya Kamam Dambhamcha, like that, she is serving. There is no thought of sensual engagement at all in her mind or in his mind. He was just doing spiritual practices and she was just assisting her. So, after some time, after a long time, Kardamuni asked, "Devahuti, you are serving so much, right? Your body became emaciated. Body is so dear to a person. And you have neglected that body for my service. I am very happy. I will give you all blessings. Right? I will give you all spiritual blessings that I have attained from the Lord. So now you tell me what you want." Then Devahuti said, "So I will take spiritual blessings later. But now I want a son. Right? So for me to get a son, I need to, reform or revive this emaciated body. This body is not suitable for any sexual relationship. So, revive my body." And after that, what she says, "Make a suitable residence where we can enjoy. Because this hermitage is so much into mode of goodness, you can't get any passion to enjoy in this kind of hermitage. So, you have to create a different kind of residence only so that we can unite with each other." So, similarly, ambience has its effect. So, when someone enters an ambience, suddenly that ambience will inspire or induce one to get into some mood, right? Get into some kind of behavior. Right? When someone is just sitting and then having a nice talk, you can't just go there and then give a very serious philosophical, you can't raise a philosophical topic. Things are very light there. You have to go with that mood. When someone is having a very deep philosophical discussion, you can't just go and crack a joke there. People look at you like this. Who is this fellow coming here? Similarly, when something is in mode of goodness, all hermitage places, they can't invoke any lusty feelings or passionate desires. In the Vaikuntha,
Yat sankulam haripadanati matra drushtair vaidhurya marakata hema mayair vimanehi yesham brahat katitata smita shobhi mukhya krishnatmanam naraja adadhurutsmayadhyair. In Vaikuntha, every resident has a personal airplane and they are having personal concerts and their physical forms are also described by Brahmaji. Right? Esham brahat katitata smita shobhi mukhya. They have beautiful smiling faces and then large hips. Still, na raja adadhur utsmayad there. The passionate desires for sense gratification will not even enter in their mind. Why? Krishnatmanam. The entire ambience is filled with Krishna consciousness. Glorification of Krishna. So, passion will not come there. So, when someone wants to enjoy sensual desires, he needs that kind of ambience. Right, he will choose to go to that kind of ambience. Kardamuni and Devahuti went to in that airplane, aerial mansion to all valleys in Mount Meru and they enjoyed there. Here also they went to different places, right? Celestial places like Chitraratha, Nandana Kanan, etc., where demigods enjoy, and there they enjoyed. Right? So here one important point that practicing devotees need to make is as much as possible. We should consciously avoid entering into atmospheres where the vibrations of sensual enjoyment are around. When the atmosphere is filled with sensual enjoyment, the atmosphere will automatically induce a desire to enjoy. So sadhus or practicing devotees consciously avoid that kind of atmospheres. Otherwise, atmosphere has its influence. 100 people are doing one thing and then you just go there. It's very difficult to chant Hare Krishna there. Right? You are carried away by that 100 people's this thing. Right? There, the vibrations will have an influence. In Vaikuntha, although so many sensual object is there, but still there is no sensual engagement. Right? But here, although when the opposite sex is not there, but there is a discussion about opposite sex. Womanizer's association is more dangerous for a devotee than woman. Right? So woman basically is opposite sex. For man, woman is a woman. For a woman, man is a woman. Like that. We need to see in that light. So, although the opposite sex is not there, if there is a lot of discussion about opposite sex, if there are so many people who are attached to opposite sex, that will induce an attachment towards opposite sex. That will inspire one to inspire desires in a person to have engagement with opposite sex. Although opposite sex is not present there because of the ambience there. Sangat sanjayate kama. Someone should consciously avoid that kind of places or that kind of ambiences. That's why sages in the Vedic times, they live in such simple hermitages. They cannot invoke any passionate feelings at all. Right? So when the whole setting is very serene, then there is no possibility of coming. Still, it is possible, but one should consciously avoid that kind of things. Read 25th verse.
Urvashi body was as fragrant as the saffron of a lotus. Being enlivened by the fragrance of her face and body, Pururava enjoyed her company for many days with great jubilation.
Hmm. Okay, next. And another point is when celestial damsels are there, their bodies also are filled with fragrance. When Kardamuni and Devahuti gave birth to 9 small girls, right, their bodies are fragrant with the fragrance of lotus. And so many demigoddesses, they go and take bath in all the celestial lakes and rivers around Mount Meru, right? Because they take bath in those reservoirs of water, the water becomes fragrant and the fragrance will go for several miles around. So we can't conceive of that, right? Because of the summer, just in 1 hour, lot of sweat will come and people only will stink. Right? No, what to speak of fragrance here? But in the heavenly planets, there is fragrance. So, Pururava enjoyed her company for many days with great jubilation. Not seeing Urvasi in his assembly, the king of heaven, Lord Indra said, he is feeling separation from Urvasi. because Varvasi is a very special gift from Naranayana Rishi to Indra. So he is missing her. He said, get, without assembly, without Urvasi, my assembly is no longer beautiful. Read the translation there.
Without Urvashi, my assembly is no longer beautiful. Considering this, he requested Gandharvas to bring her back to his heavenly planet.
Okay. So he told some Gandharvas, bring her. So thus, the Gandharvas came to earth at midnight. When everything was dark, they appeared in the house of Pururava and they stole the two lambs entrusted to the king by his wife, Urvasi. So Urvasi also places another condition. You should always protect my two lambs. Which verse is that? So, three conditions. My eatables should be prepared with ghee. Second is, you should not appear naked in front of me. Third is, you should protect my two lambs. So, these were the conditions kept by Urvasi. Right, it comes somewhere. Huh? 22. 22 is these two. Where are lambs? Lambs.
Please give protection to these two lambs. 21.
Give protection to these two lambs. Correct. So now they know how to capture Urvasi. If they just go and then start negotiating with Pururava, you should release Urvasi immediately. But Pururava will not release. Maybe Urvasi is also attached to Pururava. They may not come. She may not come. So this Gandharvas very intelligently stole the lambs. And Pururava is attached to lambs. So we should know how to make a person agree to what you want him to agree. Right? So Gandharva was very, very intelligent. They just went and silently stole the lambs. Read the next point.
Urvashi treated the two lambs like her own sons. Therefore, when they were being taken by the Gandharvas and began crying, Urvashi heard them and rebuked her husband. Now I am being killed, she said, under the protection of an unworthy husband who is a coward and an anuj, although he thinks himself a great hero.
See this. It's like we say, right? Love me dog. Like that. Urvashi said, love me lambs. So she said like that, and Pururava was trying to protect the lambs, but Gandharvas came and stole. Right? They have their own means of stealing. So Pururava's security arrangements must have avoided only the local human beings not to steal the lambs. But when Gandharvas chose to steal the lambs, Pururava could not do anything. So that was in the middle of the night also. They did not come in the daytime also. As soon as the lambs were stolen, Urvasi immediately started chastising Pururava. Forgot all good qualities. As soon as where there is one ego clash, as soon as the other person does not serve our interests, he behaves against our will, in this material world, one chooses to break relationship with the other person. One starts ridiculing the other person. He is good for nothing. So like that. So there could be a series of good incidents, right? Good favors that the person has done. But one thing that is not favorable to my attitude can spoil the relationship also. See to what extent she is saying, oh, now I am being killed. And lambs were so favorite to Urvasi that she was thinking that they are like my sons only. So now I am being killed under the protection of an unworthy husband. First point, you are unworthy. Pururava is coming from such a great dynasty. He is such a powerful kshatriya. For him to hear a gali like unworthy is a very serious thing. He is like a coward. Second point. Third, he is like a eunuch. Eunuch is not male, not female. So you are like that. Although he thinks himself a great hero. Thinks himself of a great hero. See? 4 points. He is a unworthy fellow. He is eunuch. He is coward. And he is only thinking that he is a great hero. So like that, she completely smashed his pride. Only a woman can smash the pride of a man to such an extent. Right? She says, Hatamsi aham, hatasmi aham, kunathena, kunatha. Kunatha means unworthy husband. He's not sanatha, he's kunatha. Hatamsi, I'm being killed. Napumsa, means he is eunuch. Viramanina, he thinks himself Vira, great hero. So like that she said. She completely insulted. So now he cannot respond back. If a Kshatriya is asked, he is told like this by anyone else, he would immediately cut his tongue or cut his throat also. Right? That is the valor of a Kshatriya. Kshatriya cannot take insult from another person. But because he is so henpecked because of his sexual attraction towards Urvasi, he had to hear all this. Right? When a Kshatriya is blasphemed, he should kill the offender, but he is tolerating blasphemy. So one can tolerate blasphemy only when he is weak, second, when he is humble. A humble person, when he is chastised, even if there is no mistake on his part, he will not respond back. He is very humble. Right? Okay, Krishna has arranged this chastisement for me. Tatya anukampam sasamikshamanam. Although I am innocent in this regard, still Krishna wants me to undergo this incident so that I get purified. Right? So like that he will just think, is there a humble Vaishnav, humble devotee? He wouldn't mind chastisement. Or someone will tolerate chastisement out of weakness also. A powerful person is chastising you or blaspheming you, then like you don't have strength to confront him. You don't have strength to reply back or fight back or fight for justice. Then out of weakness, out of inability, one may just keep quiet. These are the two reasons. But there is a third reason. When the person who is blaspheming you is the source of your sense gratification, then you cannot reply back. You have to tolerate that blasphemy. Urvasi is the source of sense gratification for Pururava. Whatever she says, he had to obey. Obedient servant. I surrender unto you. Yes, I agree. I am unworthy. I am eunuch. I am coward. I am not a great hero. I am only thinking like that. He is kept silent. Right? So because I depended on him, the plunderers have deprived me of my two sons, the lambs, and therefore I am now lost. Urvasi says, my husband lies down at night in fear, exactly like a woman. Now, earlier she said he's like a eunuch. Now she's saying he's like a woman only. Right? Although he appears to be a man during the day. So it's like very heavy statements. So far, where has the love gone? Right? So far, they were having... At least she did not even respectfully say, my lambs are gone, can you please protect? No. Immediately, in a different tone. The tone changed. So, Pururava, read the translation.
Pururava, stricken by the sharp words of Urvashi, like an elephant struck by its driver's pointed rod, became very angry. Not even dressing himself properly, he took a sword in hand and went out naked into the night to follow the Gandharvas who had stolen the lambs.
So, Pururava, he was not reminded of his identity as a great king. When a person is blaspheming you, if one remembers the identity that I am a Kshatriya, he would immediately reply back and then cut his throat. At this point, his identification is, I am just a protector of the lambs of this lady. Right? Because he just changed his hat. Right? So generally when a Kshatriya is blasphemed, then he would respond back. He would immediately kill the offender. But here, because he was so attached to Urvasi, he did not become angry. Right? He just took all that. Right? Strucken by the sharp words of Urvasi, like an elephant struck by driver's pointed rod. There is Ankusha. Right? Elephant goad. So he became angry, but anger not on Urvasi. Right? Anger because her lambs were stolen. That's all. He was one in purpose with Urvasi. Right? This is surrender needed. When someone is totally agreeing, when guru chastises a disciple, or when a superior senior Vaishnava chastises a junior devotee who is serving under him or who is taking his guidance, he would not reply back. Because the guru is chastising, why this service is not done properly? Right? The disciple agrees that yes, this service is not done properly. Right? Then he wants to do that service properly. Right? He is in agreement with the chastisement, with the purpose of Guru. But here, he is also in agreement with the purpose of Urvasi, of protecting the lambs. So he did not, he kept aside his false ego of being a Kshatriya. So false ego is forgotten. So this is the surrender one needs to exhibit in relationship with Guru. Right? So one has to keep one's false ego aside. One should not consider any personal insult. Right? One should immediately get into action and then do the needful, whatever the beloved wants to do, wants him to do. That's what he's doing. But here, this surrender is based on sensual relationship, sexual relationship, not spiritual service. Right? So he immediately went and he forgot to dress himself. It's in the middle of the night, he was naked and he did not even dress himself properly. So he went out. Then after giving up the two lamps, Gandharva shone brightly like lightning, thus illuminating the house of Pururava. Urvashi then saw her husband returning with the lamps in hand, but he was naked. So he got the lamps, one service is done, but another condition is forgotten. So three conditions, right? Give food, and then protecting the lambs, not appearing naked. So now he appeared naked. Then Pururava, Urvashi said, one condition is gone, right? So I'll go, right? So I'm 50% at least successful now. It's 100%. Even if you fail in one condition also, it's like totally gone. The deal is no more there. So she just left. Now, this Pururava, he was no longer seeing Urvashi. Read the translation.
No longer seeing Urvashi on his bed, Pururava was most aggrieved. Because of his great attraction for her, he was very much disturbed. Thus lamenting, he began traveling about the earth like a madman.
So he became mad out of separation. When Krishna left Vrindavan, all the gopis were feeling so much separation. When Krishna left for Vrindavan, so Devaki was feeling so much separation from Krishna. Vasudeva was feeling so much separation. He was so anxious about Krishna's protection. So all these feelings are there in our relationship with Krishna also. Feeling separation, becoming mad, getting attracted through eyes, forgetting sleep, losing interest in all external things, whatever 10 objects we have seen. So all these are there in one's original relationship with Krishna. But in a perverted way, those emotions are exhibited in our relationship with other people in this world. So he began traveling earth like a madman. So once during his travels, Satam Viksha Kurukshetri Sarasvatyamcha Tats Sakhihi Pancha Prahrishta Vadanaha Praha Suktam Pururavaha. Once during his travels all over the world, Pururava saw Urvashi. Once he saw, accompanied by 5 companions on the bank of Saraswati at Kurukshetra. Then Pururava immediately became very happy. Oh, I can see, I saw Urvashi again. Then he spoke to her sweet words.
Aho jaye tishta tishta.
Aho jaye tishta tishta.
Ghore na tyaktum arhasi.
Ghore na tyaktum arhasi.
Mam tvam adhyapya nirvritya. Vachamsi Kranavavahi.
Vachamsi Kranavavahi.
O my dear wife, O most cruel one, kindly stay, kindly stay. I know that I have never made you happy until now, but you should not give me up for that reason. This is not proper for you. Even if you have decided to give up my company, let us nonetheless talk for some time.
So great humility is exhibited here. He agrees that I have not served you at all, right? So when Guru becomes upset with the disciple, so he would consider himself totally condemned, and the disciple will think that I have not served my Guru properly at all. So like that he will think. But here he is having some similar kind of feeling. Until now I have not made you happy at all. Even if you have decided to give up my company, why can't we just come and discuss? Right? Just show some mercy in that way also. Oh Goddess, now you have refused me. My beautiful body will fall down here. And because it is unsuitable for your pleasure, it will be eaten by foxes and vultures. So, a disciple should think that my entire existence is meant for the pleasure and service of my Guru. Right? A devotee should think that my existence is meant for Krishna's pleasure. If it is not useful for his service, so what is the use of having this body? So that's how a devotee thinks. But here he thinks that if my body, if this material body is not meant to give you sense gratification, or not meant to take sense gratification from your body, this is to be fit to be eaten by foxes and vultures. Right? So that, to that extent, one can be infatuated by sensual attractions. Now Urvasi is speaking. Mamrita purushositvam masmatva dyurvrka ime kvapi sakhyam navai strinam vrkanam hridayam yatha.
Urvashi said, my dear king, you are a man, a hero. Don't be impatient and give up your life. Be sober and don't allow the senses to overcome you like foxes. Don't let the foxes eat you. In other words, you should not be controlled by your senses. Rather, you should know that the heart of a woman is like that of a fox. There is no use of making friendship with a woman.
So, Urvasi is saying that you are a man, you are a hero. Purusha, purushositvam. Ma mrtaha, don't die. Don't meet such a stupid death. Just because of your attachment to your woman, how can you think that I am fit for death only? Right? So, ma sma tvadyur vrka ime. She says, be sober. Don't allow the senses to overcome you like foxes. Right? So, vrka is fox. So, don't be like that. Don't let the foxes eat you. So, in other words, you should not be controlled by your senses. You should be controlling your senses. So like that she says. And women are like fox, she says. One should never make friendship with women. So Chandika Pandit says, never place your faith on a woman or a politician. Unless elevated to spiritual consciousness, everyone is conditioned and fallen. What to speak of a woman who is less intelligent than men? So striyo vaishyah tatha shudraha. So Prabhupada quotes certain verses that show the nature of woman. So we need to balance this kind of purports and verses with other verses and other purports of Prabhupada only. You see, once when Mataji came to Prabhupada and then asked, Prabhupada, are women less intelligent? Then Prabhupada said, if you think you are a woman, you are less intelligent. So someone is less intelligent or more intelligent, it depends on how much that person is in bodily conception. To be in bodily conception means to be less intelligent. If a soul who is in male body is thinking that he is this body, then he is less intelligent. If a soul who is living in a female body thinks that, okay, I am woman, then she is less intelligent. Right? So that bodily conception is less intelligence. But if a female thinks that I am a servant of Krishna, she is not less intelligent. If a man thinks that I am servant of Krishna, he is not less intelligent. Right? That is bodily conception. This inferiority, superiority. So all these complexes between men and women, so they are all based on bodily conception. One should know the real identity of soul. Yesterday we discussed that. And here also, once I was giving a presentation to Pradyumneshna Prabhu's group. So you were there, right? So when Mataji asked that, Prabhu, women are less intelligent, so should we just focus on other services like garland making or deity worship, etc., instead of studying the scriptures? Then I had to mention this only. So less intelligent means not about being a woman or being a man. It's thinking that I am this body. That is less intelligent. So as per tattva, everybody is a female only. Only Krishna is male. Although she is Pururava, is being addressed as Purusha here by Urvasi, but Purusha is only Krishna. Everybody is Prakriti. So Jiva is also Prakriti. Right? Jiva is energy of the Lord. He is not enjoyer. He is not proprietor. He is not controller. Only Krishna is the controller. So Jiva is also supposed to be enjoyed, servant. So like that, as per tattva, every soul is feminine, not masculine. And in conditioned state, everybody is having Purusha mentality. Whether they are in male body or female body or eunuch body, they are having this male mentality. So that's why soul is addressed as Purusha in the material world. So in the conditioned state, every soul is having Purusha mentality. In the liberated state or in the actual position of the soul is Prakriti. The soul is Prakriti and not Purusha. And ultimately, the soul is a servant of Krishna, neither male nor female. Right? Some souls are in male body, some souls are in female body. So that way, we need to see. So we should not get into disrespecting women or Vaishnavis or minimizing their position as devotees by quoting this kind of verses or purports, right? It's like when we understand things, we need to understand overall, right? We need to read other purports also. In this context, in a contextual way, so this is mentioned, this point is mentioned. So, in this whole context is like that only, about criticism of women, right? But one should not make it generic and then insensitively speak it in different forums only to hurt and create some agitation, right? One should have discrimination. Right. 37. Striyo hyakaruna krura dhurmarshaha priyasahasaha ghnantyalpaarthepi vishrabdham patim bharatam apyutam.
Women as a class are merciless and cunning. They cannot tolerate even a slight offense. For their own pleasure, they can do anything irreligious, and therefore they do not fear killing even a faithful husband or a brother.
When a soul, because of his or her previous activities, right, so they acquire a material body. When they acquire a material body, that comes along with a psychophysical makeup. Right? We can't avoid it. Right. And also internally there are some kapha vata pitta balances. Somebody who has vayu prakriti, right, he's fast. Somebody who has kapha prakriti, he's a little slow. So we are all basically controlled by material nature and our previous activities and the time factor. Kala, karma, swabhava is controlling every living entity. So we need to identify that control of external energy of the Lord over the conditioned souls and then respect them for what they are actually. And when we are dealing with them, we may have to speak to them in terms of practical terms. However, ultimately one should respect a person for what the person is. Right? Now, woman as a class are merciless and cunning. So you can't just fanatically take this statement and then quote it anywhere and everywhere insensitively. This is a very important point. So King Pururava was greatly agitated, attached to Urvasi. Yet despite his faithfulness to her, she had left him. Now considering that king was wasting his rarely achieved human life, Urvashi frankly explained the nature of woman. They cannot tolerate even a slight offense. For their own pleasure they can do anything irreligious. And therefore, they do not fear killing even a faithful husband or brother. So therefore in the material world, unless women are trying to be chaste and faithful to their husbands, there cannot be peace and prosperity. This is the point. Not every woman can be seen with this perspective, with this outlook. Right? If one is trained to be chaste and faithful to their husbands, then one will not exhibit this kind of nature. So the training has to be given. Once when the soul in a woman body is trained in a certain way, so that female will exhibit certain qualities of chastity. Now you take the case of Devahuti. Right? She was trained so nicely by Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa, how to become a chaste woman, chaste lady, chaste wife, towards a great husband. Then she exhibited all qualities. So we learn a lot from her qualities. What are the qualities? Sadhvi, Patim Ingita Kovida. And what is the next verse? Vishrujya kamam dambham cha dvesham lobham agham madam. Before that there is another verse. విశ్రంభేణ ఆత్మశౌచేన శమేన దమేన గౌరవేణ రైట్ ఆల్ అండ్ వాచా మధురయాచ భూహు. సో లైక్ దట్ దీస్ ఆర్ ఆల్ గ్రేట్ క్వాలిటీస్. అరౌండ్ సమ్ 16-17 క్వాలిటీస్ ఆర్ దేర్. ఫ్రమ్ హర్ క్వాలిటీస్ వి లెర్న్. సో ప్రభుపాద్ బ్రింగ్స్ అవుట్ వండర్ఫుల్ లెసన్స్ ఫర్ ఎ డిసైపుల్ ఇన్ హిస్ సర్వీస్ టు గురు ఫ్రమ్ దేవహుతి సర్వీస్ టు కర్దమముని రైట్. సో నౌ దేవు ఫ్రమ్ దేవుతి వి లెర్న్ దట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ క్వాలిటీస్. ఫ్రమ్ ఊర్వశి వి ఆర్ లెర్నింగ్ దిస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ క్వాలిటీస్. సో దీస్ ఆర్ నాట్ ద క్వాలిటీస్ ఆఫ్ ఎవ్రీ సింగిల్ ఉమెన్. దీస్ ఆర్ ద క్వాలిటీస్ ఆఫ్ పొల్యూటెడ్ ఉమెన్, untrained woman. So that we need to understand. Vidhayalika vishrambham agne shutyakta sauhrudah navam navam abhipsyantah pumschalyah svaira vrittayah.
Women are very easily seduced by men. Therefore, polluted women give up the friendship of a man who is their well-wisher.
See, polluted women give up the friendship of a man who is their well-wisher and establish false friendship amongst fools. So this is about polluted women, not chaste women. Chaste women would never give up the friendship of husband, the relationship with husband, especially when she is very nicely trained in the Vedic culture. Although the husband is a fool, although the husband is torturing the woman also, the people, women who are trained in Vedic culture, they exhibited such great chastity and tolerance and patience in their relationship with husband, and they transformed, they brought a transformation in the hearts of husbands also, right? So, like, we are coming from such great culture, right? In this India at least, many people are like that. Now, because of Western influence, something else may happen, but like previous generation women are like this. So this is specifically about polluted women, not every woman. So indeed they seek newer and newer friends one after another. So Prabhupada writes, a woman must always be protected either by father, husband and elderly son. When this kind of protection is given, then they are very chaste. They preserve the sanctity of a dynasty. They preserve the sanctity of a society and culture. Right? So they have that and they are like first teachers of children who come into this world, right? Son or daughter, they learn their first lessons from mother, right? What she teaches, the culture that she inculcates. So one cannot disrespect women seeing these verses. If women are given freedom to mingle with men like equals, which they now claim to be, they cannot keep their propriety. So when they are given freedom, when they become independent, that happens. The nature of a woman, as personally described by Urvasi, is to establish false friendship with someone and then seek new male companions. Read the next one. 39.
Oh, my dear king, you will be able to enjoy with me as my husband at the end of every year for one night only. In this way, you will have other children one after another.
She finally became a little merciful. First, she started giving some counseling to her. To him, to Pururava, don't be like fox, don't be attached to women, women are like this, she described. And then finally she said, okay, I'll come for one day, for one night only, in one year, she said. See, people will become, when someone is attached, so much attached to opposite sex, they just hanker for that momentary association. So in one year, one night is nothing. And he's hankering for that also. Right, he is thinking that she has done a great favor by sanctioning this. Right, that is the stage of infatuation. Right. Read 40.
Understanding that Urvashi was pregnant, Pururava returned to his palace. At the end of the year, there at Kurukshetra, he again obtained the association of Urvashi, who was then the mother of a heroic son.
Next.
Having regained Urvashi's at the end of the year, King Pururava was most jubilant and he enjoyed her company in sex for one night. But then he was very sorry at the thought of separation from her. So Urvashi spoke to him as follows.
Read.
Urvashi said, my dear king, seek shelter of the Gandharvas, for they will be able to deliver me to you again. In accordance with these words, the king satisfied the Gandharvas by prayers, and the Gandharvas, being pleased with him, gave him an
Angisthali girl who looked exactly like Urvashi. Thinking that the girl was Urvashi, the king began walking with her in the forest. But later he could understand that she was not Urvashi, but Angisthali.
So Pururava got this opportunity to associate with Urvashi once in a year. So with that also he is not getting satisfied. Right? So seeing his hankering and lamentation, Urvashi said, why don't you pray to Gandharvas who may bestow me to you? Then Gandharvas cheated him by giving another girl named Agnisthali. Then he realized that he did not get Urvashi. When one is infatuated with one person, then even if so many other persons come to him also, he cannot be satisfied. Right? For example, Ajamil was infatuated with that prostitute, low-born, Sudra, Dasi. And he gave up his most chaste and beautiful wife, who is coming from a wonderful Brahmana family. So that infatuation is, we can take a person to such an extent that although a much wonderful and better alternative is given to him, he cannot accept it because he is infatuated with that low class taste only. Right? The low class or high class, when someone is just fixed up in just one sense object, he cannot compromise with any other object like that. So Pururava got it. So that's why attraction to one specific person is on a different level. Generally, some people have some general sense attraction. Right? So, means that's a generic attitude. But if one has very specific attraction towards one person only, that's even more considered more dangerous. Right? So, then King Pururava then left Agnisthali in the forest and returned home. When he meditated all night upon Urvashi, in the course of his meditation, the Treta Millennium began. And therefore, the principles of three Vedas, including the process of performing yajna to fulfill fruitive activities, appeared within his heart. So, Prabhupada speaks about some yajnas and what is the highest yajna in Kali Yuga? Sankirtan yajna. So, Prabhupada always brings us to the main point, what you are supposed to do, Sankirtan yajna. So, next. When the process of fruitive yajna became manifest within his heart, read the translation.
King Pururava went to the same spot where he had left Agnisthali. There he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree, an Ashwar tree had grown. He then took a piece of wood from that tree and made it into two arnis. Desiring to go to the planet where Urvashi resided, he chanted mantras, meditating upon the lower arni as Urvashi and the upper one as himself, and a piece of wood between them as his son. In this way, he began to ignite a fire.
Okay. So he has only one ambition, just to have sex life with Urvashi and thereby get a son. He had so much lust in his heart that even while performing yajna, he thought of Urvashi. Instead of thinking of the matter of yajna, master of yajna, Yajneshwara. See this. When Dhruva Maharaj, when he had a desire to become the, to sit in a topmost position, even superior to Brahma, he was instructed by Narad Muni, you chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then you also do this and do that, some deity worship you do, meditate on the form of the Lord, he said. So Dhruva Maharaj was doing all those austerities, but during those austerities, he was completely focused on the Supreme Lord. He was not meditating on what he was going to get after these austerities. It was not a distracted practice. It was not a practice which is filled with meditation on the result. He was absorbed in the practice. Although initially he began with some ambitions, right, material ambitions only, still the practice was very sincere. So there is a transformation in his attitude. So his attitude got transformed. And after seeing the Lord, he gave up his material ambition also. Nevertheless, he got that material desire fulfilled. But in the case of Pururava, his practice itself was distracted. So practice did not have an effect, a transforming effect on Pururava. In Atri's case also, he was determined to get a son. That's why he is performing austerities. And after seeing the Lord, He did not give up his material ambition of getting a son who is the Supreme Lord, Jagadisha, Atrimani. So here in Pururava's case also it's happening. So one should do the service to Guru or Krishna for the sake of doing it. One should not think that after doing the service, what incentives am I going to get? Right? What would be the result? So that is not a ideal mood of rendering service. So 46th verse. From Pururava's rubbing of the Aranis came a fire. By such a fire, one can achieve all success in material enjoyment and be purified in seminal birth, initiation, and in the performance of sacrifice, which are invoked with the combined letters A-Uma. Thus the fire was considered the son of King Pururava. So he is placing some wood. One stick is representing Urvasi, one stick is representing Pururava. He was thinking, we want to get a son. We will unite and we will get a son. By the means of that fire, Pururava, who desired to go to the planet where Urvasi resided, performed a sacrifice by which he satisfied the Lord Hari. Thus he worshipped the Lord who is beyond the perception of senses and is the reservoir of demigods. So finally, he satisfied the Lord. So Prabhupada elaborates in the purport about how the Lord is Hari, Yajna, Adhokshaja, like that. So, the Lord is Adhokshaja, beyond the perception of Pururava. Consequently, some kind of Yajna must be performed to fulfill the desires of living entity. Yajnas can be performed in human society only when the society is divided by Varnashram Dharma. Here, how can the Lord bestow such a material ambition of Pururava? That may be a question. But Lord is Yathamam Prapadyante. When you approach Him with a material desire, Lord will fulfill that material desire in such a way that you don't desire on a material plane again. That is how Lord fulfills the material desires. Apparently, Lord has fulfilled the desire of Pururava to attain Urvasi, and then we will see the next two verses explain how he got the association of Urvasi. But ultimately he was detached. Right? That's why in several episodes of Bhagavatam we see Akama Sarvakamova Mokshakama Udaradhihi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purushaparam. That is a very wonderful principle. Bhagavatam definitely will begin with Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Phalam Sukamukhadamuradravasam Yutam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. So it is relished by Rasikas, Bhuvi Bhavukas. It is the essence of all Vedic literatures. So dharma projita kaitavo atra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. All the materially motivated religions are kicked out right in the beginning of Bhagavatam. But that is in first canto. In the second canto, akama sarva kamava moksha kama udaradhihi. Right, whatever you have, desire you have, whether you have desire for liberation or sense gratification, you can directly go to the Lord. If dharma projita kaitavotra, then how can this be valid? Both are there. Bhagavatam is meant for everybody. Bhagavatam is meant to satisfy the hankerings of learned people who want more nectar, right? Devotees who want to relish the qualities of Krishna. And Bhagavatam is also meant to mitigate the miseries and sufferings of people and somehow or the other connect people to Krishna. Right? Akama sarvakamova, moksha kama udaradhihi. So Bhagavatam is a universal scripture. It is relevant to every category of people, right? So, last but one verse. Read the translation.
In the Satyuga, the first millennium, all the Vedic mantras were included in one mantra, Pranava, the root of all Vedic mantras. In other words, the Atharvaveda alone was the source of all Vedic knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, was the only worshipable deity. There was no recommendation for worshipping of the demigods. Fire was one only, and the only order of life in human society was known as Hamsa.
So in this context, Sukadeva Goswami also speaks a little bit about the qualities of Satya Yuga. Next, read the last verse.
O Maharaj Parikshit, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, King Pururava inaugurated a Karmakanda sacrifice. Thus Pururava, who considered the yajnic fire his son, was able to go to the Gandharva Loka as he desired.
Okay. He was able to go to Gandharva Loka as he desired. And as I said, it's not the culmination of Pururava episode, more is there in the 11th canto. That's the real culmination. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.